and pause and rewind live radio, listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official app for free from your app store now. That's it for the week. James O'Brien's The Other Side of the News on LBC. I'll be with you Monday morning from 7. Meantime, have a safe weekend.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock and, well, two interviews on The Breakfast Show and then two questions for Mid-Morning Matters, as I think I will call the show this week. I speak, of course, of Sir Mark Rowley doing what is long overdue, but the poor fella can't really do it unless he's got the opportunity to do so, pushing back against this tidal wave of lies, racism, bigotry, whatever you want to call it. They all fit Donald Trump, don't they, tragically? But with regard to our capital city, who would have thought that people who style themselves as patriots would be dedicating so much energy and time, people in this country, dedicating so much energy and time to denigrating London, to denigrating the capital city and lying about it? Why do they do it? And did Wes Streeting just play the mother of all blinders?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Health Secretary Wes Streeting has told LBC he is genuinely fearful for the NHS as it faces a doctor's strike and the surge in flu cases. The BMA is polling resident doctors in England to see if they are willing to call off next week's walkout. Mr. Streeting's warned the health service could collapse if they don't.
The challenge we've got now is that, let's say, this ballot is successful from my point of view. Resident doctors vote for it, call off the strikes. Some of the damage will have already been done because there will be patients who've already had their appointments cancelled and doctors who've had their leave cancelled to cover strikes. And I cannot understand why, when I offered to rearrange strikes in January, why they didn't take up that offer. Because if they wanted to just give me a kick in, well, there's an opportunity to do that in January.
The Metropolitan Police Commissioner has rejected Donald Trump's claims about crime in London. Sir Mark Rowley has told LBC suggestions from the US about no-go areas in the capital are politically motivated.
The picture that's been portrayed sometimes about London internationally is not accurate. London is a safe place to come. It's getting safer every day. My officers are working extraordinarily hard, and we as proud Londoners should kick back against the nonsense on social media trying to run it down.
Sir Mark has confirmed Scotland Yard is looking at an alleged cover-up of abuse allegations against an officer. It's after LBC revealed the individual was allowed to retire while he was still under investigation in 2012. The commissioners told LBC that teams are double-checking their handling of the case at the time. Local authorities in England are to be given £3 billion to create 50,000 special needs places in schools. They will be able to use the money for facilities like support rooms within conventional schools. Businesses and consumers pre-budget jitters have been blamed for another fall in economic growth. Most economists had been expecting an uptick in GDP, but the economy contracted by 0.1% in October. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 97.30. That is up 27. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather more settled today with sunny spells for many places, some rain in central and eastern England, and some blustery showers in the northwest. A high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Minutes after 10 is the time. A very good morning to you. I hope you're well today. I do find as I get older, I lean towards saying things to you at the top of the show like, oh, it's mild out, isn't it? I think I might be turning into my mum. But it is mild out, isn't it, for this time of year? I am sort of turning the heating off when I get home, not just in full dad mode, but because it doesn't need to be on. Shall we begin with a little bit of Socrates? Should we begin every show until Christmas with a little bit of Socrates? I speak, of course, of the ancient Greek philosopher, not the legendary Brazilian football player, or Socrates. Shall I tell you what the cultural reference is, or shall I just let you have that little nugget, that little Easter egg, for those who have similar enthusiasms to me? Socrates. We'll start with a little bit of Socrates. The unexamined life is not worth living, said the great man himself, probably. And I wonder some mornings where the line is between self-examination and self-obsession. And how much do you examine your life before you turn into a crashing bore who can only ever talk about themselves? Yeah, all right, don't all shout at once. I appreciate I'm vulnerable to that accusation sometimes. And the reason I mention it is because I noticed something today about... what's his chops? Wes Streeting. I have a weird reaction to people who seem too good to be true, or people who are pulling away from the pack. I've got it a bit with Zach Polanski, the leader of the Greens, but that is very much a holding pattern until I get the opportunity to find out more about him and ideally sit down with him for an hour or so on full disclosure. I have done that with Wes Streeting, and I came out of that. He doesn't... There's two interviews Nick did this morning. I don't know if you heard either of them, or both of them, or neither of them, but I'll give you a quick précis. The head of the Mets, Sir Mark Rowley, is quite remarkably and understandably guarded. Much harder interview, I imagine. I'm sure Nick would agree. A much harder interview than Wes Streeting, because some people professionally either can't or won't give you much. You know, for example, he refused to specifically take on the ludicrous insults, the hideous insults that the President of the United States, in a profoundly racist fashion, has directed at our triple times elected mayor, Sadiq Khan, and he won't get involved in that. He calls it a sparring between politicians. I don't know. I was tempted to do that as a phone-in. I suppose I still might. Whether or not that is the correct thing to do, whether or not he should stick up for the mayor, I kind of think probably not. Focus on the words that Trump has said about London rather than necessarily getting involved in the to-ing and fro-ing of what you could call political point scoring. I personally would make an exception when it gets racist. But I suppose you could mount a case for saying that Trump hasn't actually been explicitly racist. It's just that everybody knows he is. So Rowley doesn't give you much as an interviewer. And when you're listening to interviewee, you can hear the guardrails. You can hear the portcullises. Is that the plural of portcullis? It must be, mustn't it? Is it a Latin word? It might be portcullis. Portcullis, Socrates, Greek to Latin, and it's only 7 minutes after 10. You can hear the portcullises that are in place. You don't even need to hear them coming down because they've never been lifted up. And that's fine. You wouldn't want the head of the Met to overshare necessarily, would you? You wouldn't want the head of the Metropolitan Police to come out of the studio and go, ooh, I wonder if I went a little bit too far that time. Streeting's a much more interesting character in many ways, just from solely from an interviewing point of view, because he seems to be quite unguarded on occasion. Calling the BMA or the sort of leadership of the BMA moaning minis not long ago, and expressing to Nick his complete lack of respect, regret for that turn of phrase. There's a very interesting interview in the New Statesman magazine this weekend in which he's pretty outspoken about his dissatisfaction with elements of his own government. But it could be that that's incredibly cynical and carefully contrived. It may not be unguarded at all. It just looks unguarded. And this is what I mean about my own slightly reflex reactions to people who everybody else is beginning to paint as the answer to our problems. So whether it is Zach Polanski or Wes Streeting, even if I really, really liked someone previously, as soon as they move into that position, I don't know whether it's personal or professional, actually. If I didn't do this for a living, would I think it's my job to work harder to look for the flaws, to look for the problems, to look for the feet of clay, if you like, which is a very roundabout way of telling you that I can't find any this morning. When is the last time I came on air and said to you, I think that a politician's performance during a potential or a period of crisis has been close to perfect? When's the last time I did that? I don't know that I ever have, actually. And oddly, it's not just the politician I'm going to be saying that about this morning. I would suggest that Sir Mark Rowley's response to Donald Trump's lies about London, which are lifted wholesale from Russian bots, racists and Nigel Farage fans, although I appreciate that if that were a Venn diagram, it would look a lot like a circle. Russian bots, Russian bot farms, trolls, obvious white supremacist racists and Nigel Farage fans who obviously don't live in London, because if they did, they wouldn't be able to lie straight in bed after claiming that this city is at some particular peril. So Mark Rowley has probably responded to them in terms that are close to perfect. And I think we may talk about both today. In fact, we'll examine both slightly hyperbolic claims of mine that these men have both come close to political perfection. So, no, I said nice things about Matt Hancock. I definitely never said he was handling things perfectly. I fully appreciate that is the biggest historical example of the curse of O'Brien, which is not confined to right-wing politicians, by the way. Whenever I say nice things about anybody, they end up letting us down. Maybe that's why I've got this reflex reaction now to people who are pulling ahead of the pack. If I join in and say, oh, yes, he's got leader written all over him, then it'll turn out tomorrow that he tortures puppies for fun at weekends, or similar. But I think it's healthy as well. You know, if you are relying on me to help you form the opinions you need to vote and think in evidence-based, informed, fact-based fashion, then I can't get caught up in other people's cults. I can't get caught up in other people's fan clubs, even if I am sometimes tempted to. So we are, I think, facing a bit of a flumageddon. You can have that for nothing if you want. I think there's a bit of a flumageddon on the horizon. Clearly, the figures are much greater than this time last year, and much, much greater than 2 or 3 years ago. There'd be various reasons for that. But the incidence of flu, whether you're looking at it from a big picture or a little picture perspective, it's looking pretty hairy, right? It's looking pretty scary. It's not just the politicians telling us that, it's the NHS professionals and the NHS leadership. And you can't help but feel that for resident doctors to go on strike now, to go on strike next week, in full knowledge that the NHS is under mortal threat from a flu, a particularly virulent flu epidemic that is currently growing at a rate of knots, you can't help thinking that it would be a particularly ill-advised position for resident doctors to take. Well, at least I would say at the first turn, at the first glance, this so-called super flu. Outbreaks in schools, for example, are off the charts. Some of these graphs are proper double-take, head-turning territory, caused up by a particularly infectious strain, with health chiefs describing a, and I quote now, worst-case scenario. Hospital admissions for flu up by more than 50% in a week. Chemists, it happened to me yesterday, I went to three separate chemists, two boots and a super drug, which is a dreadful rewriting of the Partridge in a Pear Tree song, isn't it? Two boots and a super drug yesterday, and three of them, or was it two super drugs and a boots? Hang on, three calling birds, two super drugs and a boots, and none of them had a jab. And none of them had a flu jab, which I wanted to get. Because if I'm going to get a bit, if I'm going to ail a bit with the side effects, I'd rather I did it over the weekend. You see, you don't rely upon me to entertain you and inform you. So if I'm going to feel a little bit crook, as you sometimes do with jabs, but I didn't last time, that was the plan. So I'll be out today as well after the show looking for chemists that have doses. In fact, if you are a chemist and you have got doses and you are en route from London's fashionable Leicester Square back to Brentford, then let me know and I'll see you later. But they were running out, so I know that that's true as well. I also know two teenage boys who are who have been hospitalised, one with an infection that moved and one who was just simply absolutely banjaxed by it, so they had to put him on a drip. And I don't know why I find the fact that they are teenage boys, or fighting-age boys, as you have to say in the land of Farage, fighting-age boys, you sort of think of them as being more physically robust. They're certainly more physically robust than me or their nans, aren't they? And they've fallen pretty hard with it. Particular problem, of course, is that you can't get the vaccination if you are aged between 2 and 17. Or I think that's right. 4 million children remain unvaccinated. aged between 2 and 17 by the end of October. No, you can get vaccinated. You just couldn't get, we couldn't get one yesterday for my 17-year-old. I don't know about the detail of it, and that's not what our conversation is about today. Here is the question. Wes Streeting has called upon doctors, resident doctors, not to strike. And that bit is fine. That is what you would expect. But he's also offered to extend the mandate. So rather than striking next week, having a survey this weekend and deciding whether or not the strike goes ahead, rather than do that, he has suggested that they work through the flu outbreak and come back in January, at which point he will extend the mandate that is currently in place. So the last positive strike vote runs out of road, if you see, or I guess towards the end of this month. And as Health Secretary, he can, I presume he has the authority to say, don't worry about the mandate. You don't need to have a full re-ballot. You can do next month the survey you were going to do this weekend and just decide whether the support is there for strike action. And we often expect our politicians to come up with answers to insoluble problems. And I am here, and the phone lines are open for you to attack me, hopefully in slightly polite fashions, please, because I can't remember the last time I heard a politician come up with something that sounded both constructive and correct. In a moment of crisis, not like a overall policy announcement. I really like what Lisa Nandy had to say this week, for example, about youth clubs. But in terms of an imminent crisis, and there is an iceberg ahead, and the captain of the ship, in this case the NHS, has, to my mind, issued really good orders precisely because of that postponement of the mandate. That's the bit that strikes me as both creative and correct. In fact, I would go so far as to say that if you were not in favour of complete capitulation, what Wes Streeting has done with regards to the deal offered, the promises made to resident doctors, which address some of the things that pops up on this programme, caller after caller after caller, insisting that they were not on strike exclusively, and in many cases not even at all, for greater pay. They were on strike in pursuit of better terms and conditions, especially for the trainees, the doctors, the resident doctors who were coming up in generations after theirs. He appears to have put together a package for precisely those resident doctors, present and future, that addresses many of the problems. And with regard to the postponement of the mandate, I think he's closed down all avenues of complaint until you tell me otherwise. Listen, it doesn't actually make for brilliant radio when we all agree that a politician has done something right. But every now and then, I think it's important that we do it. I'm not suggesting for a minute you have to ring me to agree with me, but if it turns out that way, what I suppose I want is a junior doctor who's unpersuaded, a resident doctor who is unpersuaded by this. The Holy Grail, perhaps? A resident doctor who was in favour of strike action but believes that the Health Secretary has done enough to assuage their concerns. We heard a couple of potentials in that category on The Breakfast Show this morning. And, of course, because of the way that I'm framing the question, we can all get involved. This isn't just about resident doctors. This is about whether or not you, as a voter and a potential patient or an actual patient in the NHS, feel that the Secretary of State for Health is, I'm going to say it, all right, I think he's playing a blinder. I'm not persuaded that he's the king across the water. I'm not persuaded that he's the answer to all Labour's problems. I'm not even persuaded that he's a shoo-in to be the next Labour leader. He's got a small problem called the actual party membership to get over first, as well as lots of rivals in the event of Keir Starmer running out of road. But this morning, as of this morning, with regard to this crisis, this combination of crisis, the flu epidemic exploding, super flu exploding, and resident doctors still intending to go on strike next week, I think Wes Streeting has played a blinder. Do you? 0345 6060 973. That's it. That's the question. I think he's played a blinder. Do you agree? Whether you're a resident doctor, whether you are whether you haven't been to see a doctor for 30 years or whether you're only just getting across the facts now as I share them with you. They're supposed to be going out on strike next week. There is a massive super flu crisis. There is a strike mandate in place. And the Secretary of State for Health says, help us get through this crisis. And then come January, we can get back to where we are today. But let's just press pause for a month and put the welfare, the safety, the health of the nation first. I think it's a blinder. I could be wrong. 19 minutes after 10, 0345 6060 973. Hit the numbers now, and you could be on first on this fun-filled Friday.
LBC.
You weren't supposed to burn the potatoes or invite everyone round at two. We said three. You weren't supposed to fall asleep on the sofa or ask me to marry you. And you weren't supposed to be here. But you are. Thanks to the best gift you ever got. And mine is still having you.
When you donate to the British Heart Foundation, you give a gift that keeps on living. Search BHF today and help us fund life-saving research.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers. On my birthday. I'm 95 minutes late. But it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode, your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop. Plus, free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60. Max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
Global Player is home to fantastic podcasts like Full Disclosure with James O'Brien.
Join me for thoughtful conversations with fascinating people from the worlds of politics, news and entertainment.
There's no national procurement system for schools or hospitals or old people's homes.
There just should be.
We could love our farmers much more by having a Ministry of Food that we had in the war.
Plus, there is so much more. Global Player. Download it now for free.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It is 21 minutes after 10, and it is a question I don't think we ask very often. Whoever's in power, I suppose you would have hoped I'd have asked it a little bit more often with a Labour government than you would ever get under Liz Truss or Boris Johnson or even Rishi Sunak. But are we witnessing a politician get something almost entirely right? I speak of Wes Streeting and his approach to the imminent resident doctors strike, and I use a phrase I can't remember using to describe a politician in years. But is he indeed playing a blinder? There's two crucial constituents to this. One is the flu crisis that is unfolding, and one is the postponement of the mandate or the extension of the strike mandate, so that resident doctors are being told, help us get through this, albeit that we've put a better deal in place. We've addressed a lot of the things that you were telling us you were worried about. Help us get through this, and we can get back to the conversation. If you don't like the new deal, we can get back to the negotiation. We can get back to the conversation about striking in January. And I don't know what else he could have done except capitulate. And if you think he should have capitulated completely, well, 0345 6060 973 is the number for you. Just to clarify one thing, the usual rule in place on these, where absolute priority is given to resident doctors, people caught in the actual crux of the conversation, is not in place. I'm not a resident doctor. I hope that doesn't come as a major surprise to anybody. But we are all affected by resident doctor strikes. And whether we realise it or not, we are all affected by politics. And this is one of those juxtapositions, one of those moments where personal and political run headlong into each other. And I don't see much room. I'm getting nervous now. I say something like this out loud and I think you're setting yourself up for a massive fall. I don't see much room for criticising how Wes Streeting is handling this. If you do, front of the queue. Anne's in Kenilworth. Anne, what would you like to say? We may never know. Anne, can you hear me?
Hello.
There you are. What would you like to say?
Hi, thanks for having me on. Well, I was just saying to your researchers there that I find what he's saying disingenuous.
Oh, good. There we go. Straight out of the blocks. And we're already sort of reviewing the situation. Tell me why.
Well, because Wes is saying that he wants to protect people, he wants to protect staff, he wants to protect the general public. But I find that disingenuous because he is not doing the things that would protect the staff and patients. We had the medical editor for the BBC, Fergus Walsh, on the BBC News last night saying that the fluid-resistant masks that are being provided for the staff and patients in hospitals and they're being encouraged to wear, they're not effective. So if Wes was really serious about protecting people from the flu when they're accessing healthcare and giving out the correct advice for how to protect yourself in this epidemic, he would be putting his money where his mouth is, giving out the correct advice and giving out the correct PPE. And he's not doing that. Why is he not doing that?
Do you know, in the days before therapy, Anne, I would be biting your head off now for failing completely to address the question that I have asked on the programme this morning and going off down your own avenue of complaint. In the context exclusively of the strike, you haven't actually answered the question that I asked, whether or not he could be handling the negotiations, the mandate, the imminent walkout and its relationship to the flu crisis better. But happily, I'm a warmer, I'm a more forgiving and I'm a kinder human being than I was before I discovered the joys of therapy. So I will join you on your football pitch. And I will say I didn't know that. I'm swatting up now on the idea that the face masks may be suboptimal and that obviously would be something that falls under the health secretary's purview. But I mean, does it change any of the thrust of what he has been doing this morning with regard to the strike?
I feel that it is connected because I think he's taking the moral high ground, and that is disingenuous. I find that disingenuous. If he was really trying to protect staff, the NHS staff, then he would actually be protecting them by giving them, you know,
What's your angle on this? Do you work in the NHS?
I don't work in the NHS. My angle is I'm concerned about accessing healthcare.
Yes.
If I need to go to the hospital, I don't feel protected when I go to the hospital. So, and I don't feel that my relatives are protected either. My father-in-law has just had a stroke. He's in hospital at the moment. Everybody in the hospital around him won't be wearing the effective masks. There's flu going around. He is at risk.
I can't find the story you're referring to. So are you suggesting that the masks they wear all the time are not fit for purpose?
Yeah, they're not fit for purpose because flu is transmitted by predominantly via the airborne route, as is COVID, and so
I can feel my pre-therapy self fighting to the surface now because this isn't really relevant to the conversation that we're having, and I'm sceptical. Slightly sceptical of the idea that the masks, the PPE that the NHS is using in normal times, all the time, is pointless and useless.
No, they're not pointless and useless. Good. They offer.
Someone needs to call Michelle Moan, I think.
Some we need protection.
Yes, but you want better, and you feel that should be on higher up on the list of Wes Streeting's priorities. I'm afraid you have the advantage of me. In terms of knowledge and understanding, it's clearly something you care about very much, and I would never dream of making light of that. And I will. I'll endeavour to find the research that I need or the reports that I need to get a better grasp of what you're saying. I don't, however, think it necessarily changes the arithmetic of what we're examining together this morning. The junior doctors, the resident doctors, are due to strike next week. The NHS is under threat from a massive super flu crisis. The Secretary of State for Health is charged with spinning those two plates, and outright capitulation is off the table, not least because of the size of the pay settlement that resident doctors received shortly after Labour coming to power. But he has met them on many of the other non-pay related issues that they insisted were a rationale for the industrial action. And as a consequence of those two things, the flu crisis and the improved offer, he has said, get us through this current crisis and move us on to January, at which point we can come back to the table and start negotiating. There's nothing to stop him if Anne is correct about everything. Picking up the point with regard to PPE in the meantime. But I don't want, for the avoidance of doubt, I don't want to go down that avenue endlessly. I want to look at the question of how Wes Streeting is dealing, not with Anne's concerns about PPE, valid though I'm sure they are, but with resident doctors' concerns about A, the terms and conditions that they currently enjoy, and I think more crucially, B, the terms and conditions that their followers into the profession will enjoy, and the combination of imminent superflu crisis and imminent industrial action. I think with those two counters on the table, he has displayed tactics that are close to faultless in that very specific window of examination, close to faultless. But you are, of course, welcome, indeed encouraged, to disagree. 0345 60 60 973 is the number that you need. And that other line he said to Nick, if the strike goes ahead, I cannot tell you that no patient will not come to harm or fatal harm. I cannot make that guarantee. He accuses the BMA of having chosen this week because, and again, I quote, they know it will be most painful for the NHS. And that is an accusation of opportunism. I wonder, Thor and Peter will be up first after the news. I wonder if you could accuse Wes Streeting of opportunism. Because the flu crisis is a weapon with which he can hit junior doctors, he can hit resident doctors over the head, and sort of undermine the mandate and the rationale that they had for industrial action in the first place. Do you see what I mean? Maybe he's also being an opportunist. You can say to people going on strike at a crucial time, they are being opportunistic. They are using the crisis as an opportunity to drive home their point. But possibly, Wes Streeting can be quite easily accused of doing exactly the same thing. 10:30 is the time. Thomas Watts has your headline.
The Health Secretary has warned patients could die as a result of a pre-Christmas strike by resident doctors.
It risks serious harm to patients.
Does it risk death?
I cannot guarantee. Honestly, Nick, I don't want to catastrophise or sensationalise. I cannot sit here and look you in the eye and tell you that no patient will come to harm or fatal harm. I cannot make that guarantee.
Wes Streeting's told LBC he is genuinely fearful for the NHS as it faces a surge in flu cases. The Metropolitan Police Chief, Sir Mark Rowley's told LBC it is ridiculous for anyone in the US to say London is unsafe. Donald Trump's claimed there are parts of the capital where even the police won't go. Economists have blamed pre-budget speculation and concerns for an unexpected fall in GDP. Most had been expecting an uptick in economic growth, but the economy contracted by 0.1% in October. LBC weather more settled today with sunny spells for many, but rain in central and eastern England and blustery showers in the northwest. A high of 12 degrees.
LBC.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirements for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
Do you have a Co-op card or membership number? In July, Co-op's CEO confirmed that the personal data of all 6.5 million members was accessed in a major cyber attack. If you're a member, your information may have been exposed, and you could be entitled to compensation through a group action claim. Check your eligibility today at jointheclaim.com. It's quick, secure, and easy to do online at jointheclaim.com.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Back the internet with an eSIM from Aerolo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers on my birthday. I'm 95 minutes late, but it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode, your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop, plus free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado, life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60. Max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 60 60 973.
10:33 is the time. We are nothing if not live, as you know. I've been signally unable to find any support for the idea that the face masks that NHS staff wear are a cause for concern, as an earlier caller expressed. In fact, quite a lot of NHS people are a little unhappy about that opinion being voiced. I mean, perfectly entitled to be unhappy about it, but people are equally entitled to voice their opinions. But just for the avoidance of doubt, I would park those concerns until we are provided with more evidence or proof. And it is why the question is quite tight in its parameters this morning. Wes Treating is addressing the concerns of resident doctors. He is introducing emergency legislation. One of the strangest things about this country at the moment is the number, and this is quite a middle-class observation, I grant you, the number of wannabe doctors with exceptional A-level grades who can't get into medical school. The number of training places is smaller than the number of applicants. So 4,000 more specialty training places overall, 1,000 specifically for 2026. If you're paying exam fees and Royal College membership, you're going to get the money back. You're going to be reimbursed for that. The less than full-time allowance will be increased by 50% to £1,500. And the emergency legislation in the UK, and Republic of Ireland medical graduates as well as doctors who have worked in the NHS for a significant period of time, will be given priority over international graduates, something else that many of our callers told us about. So he is meeting those concerns without upping the wages, and he is extending the mandate for the strike without expecting another full vote by the BMA. What could he have done better? Thor is in Waltham Forest. Thor, what would you like to say?
Hello, Thor. Good morning. Just as a background, I said this before, I was in his next-door constituency, Leighton and Wormstead, and I was the Conservative chairman there for several years, and my best friend, John Kissane, was my opposite number in Ilford North, where Wes comes from, and I had two very hard-fought general elections where I campaigned against him.
Okay.
And I have to tell you, this man, Wes Treating, has integrity coming out of his ears. He is... Never a dirty trick comes from him. Never any sort of unprofessionalism. I've been constantly impressed with his ability.
Do you know, the problem here is, and it's not your fault, this, but he is not very popular with the Labour member, with much of the Labour membership, of course, and he's perceived as being very much on the right wing of the left wing party, the right wing of
the
Labour party.
Well, he is. He's part of Labour Together.
But what you're doing is, for them at least, I'm not suggesting they're right, I'm just telling you exactly what will be going on in their minds at the moment. You're proving their point. If you, as a dyed-in-the-wool Tory, you love Wes Treating, that proves all the terrible things about him that this lot consider to be self-evident.
But I'm a wet One Nation Tory, so I'm one of those ones Margaret Thatcher thought was wet behind the ears.
You're an endangered species, Thor, aren't you?
I'm an endangered species. Well, I'm not even a member anymore.
There you go. I'm not surprised. God, tell me... Did you really? Well, that's fair. You are the political constituency, just while you're here, that fascinates me most, actually, because I've got no idea where you're supposed to turn at the moment. But at the moment, you're turning towards Wes Treating.
I think he's, as I say, he's a centrist. He's on the right of the Labour Party, and I was on the left of the Conservative Party. So we kind of agree on a number of things.
Yes.
And I think, I mean, look, we've had some other good MPs in our area. Calvin Bailey, our current MP, ex-RAF guy, I think he's pretty good.
Just let me steer you back, if I may, rather than a sort of quick roundup of local MPs. Steer you back to why Wes Treating has got this right. What do you like about this intervention?
Because he's taking an unpopular stand, but he's absolutely right. We've got no money. We have no money in the kitty. And that's not really the fault of any government. It's because we have an ageing population. We're in the middle of the generation trap where we've got far too many retired people and not enough people paying in. But there's just not enough money to pay for everything that people want. He doesn't have anywhere to go. We have nowhere to cut it from. The doctors have had a big payout. They want more. Everybody wants more.
But you can't have it. And you can add add a yet to that to sugar the pill. I can't let you make claims about our parlous economic state without shouting Brexit at you, or of course pointing out that £11 billion...
Well, I was part of the Better Off Together, alongside my Liberal Democrat and Labour...
I had a feeling you might be, but I mean...
I was certainly campaigning with them.
The evidence is... But you're right. No, the two
things... didn't help us at all, but people always let off.
I don't let him off. He gets a whole chapter in how they broke Britain. But the but again, you're doing it again. This is it's like nailing jelly to a wall talking to you. I'm trying to get you to focus in on the thing under. Well, I suppose I brought Brexit up, didn't I?
You did bring Brexit up.
No, I take that. Mea culpa. So you, yeah. I mean, you're a fan already, as it were, or an admirer already, and the rationale for not giving them a pay rise is one that you have explained very clearly. What about this notion of extending the mandate? Because in a way, that keeps the dream alive of a pay rise. It just postpones Judgment Day until next year. And as a sort of political veteran, you probably have a stronger bead on that than I do, because it's proper sort of pork barrel politics, isn't it? It's proper kind of detail, tactical detail, deciding to do something that plays very well with the public, but actually kicks the problem down the road, rather than removing it entirely.
It's taking the motion, isn't it? Real politics is about nuts and bolts. It's not about ideals. It's about getting things done.
Yeah, I mean, again, an area in which the left of the left would be shouting at the radio. Exactly! He says politics isn't about ideals. If I read you a message from Bruce, do you promise to take it in good spirit?
Of course.
He said, it's not the fault of any government, he says. Was this guy in a coma for 14 years? To which we both respond by saying, no, he was in the Tory party.
Yep, okay.
I did check. 10:39. But you're right, the demographic change that renders or explains much of our plight at the moment is not something that any government was responsible for, although some political parties remain in abject denial of the reality that Thor describes. Peter is in Wolverhampton. Peter, what would you like to say?
Hello there, James.
Hello there, Peter.
First up, congrats on your new Nelson Mandela estate.
Thank you very much. This is a reference, if you weren't listening yesterday, to my receipt of the Global Player Peace Prize, brackets, mid-morning, weekdays, LBC only, close brackets. Thank you, Peter. Carry on.
Well, I agree with your opening premise, actually. I disagree with your first call around. I'm in the rare position of thinking a politician wasn't disingenuous at all.
Yeah, same.
I think instead of evading questions, he tried to just give straightforward answers to his proposals, you know? And I personally think that if resident doctors go ahead with this strike, they're going to shoot themselves in the foot, because it seems to me that strikes work when they've got the public behind them. And I think he was entirely reasonable in, like I say, I'm in a rare position of agreeing with a politician and actually silently applauding one for just saying, look, this is what it is. Don't do this.
Yeah, because he's not promising.
And they'll shoot themselves in the foot.
Yeah, I'm open to correction, as I'm sure you are as well. But there is something a bit odd about this sort of feeling, in that you are pretty clear that nothing has been kept from you. You are examining the conduct of a politician who is trying to actually get over a line. He's not sort of, he's not blowing smoke up our backsides, and he's not promising. I don't agree with Thor about ideals. I think ideals absolutely have a place in politics. I think there has to be an interplay between pragmatism and idealism, and somewhere between those two posts, perfection lies. Political perfection, although neither of us have ever seen it in our lifetime. But what Wes Streeting has done is identify a problem and try to solve it.
Yeah, I mean, he had a nice phrase this morning. He said, don't substitute perfect for good, or something
like
that.
Yeah, don't let perfect be the enemy of the good.
I thought he was right.
And that, do you know what?
I mean, over the course of my life, I've heard politicians being asked questions and then answer a different one, because the answer that they know they need to give isn't the one they want.
Yes.
But I thought he was clear as day.
I think I agree with you, although, as I explained at the outset, it makes me a little bit uncomfortable. I'm much happier lobbing a criticism or picking holes in political positions than I am offering up cautious, as indeed Peter has been doing, cautious praise. That idea of course, answering a question utterly different from the one that you've been asked is increasingly known in the trade as faraging. I'll leave you to work out why. Karen is in Kingston. Karen, what would you like to say?
Hi. Briefly, I'm a doctor's mum, and what sounds very simple, like your last caller alluded to, as being very clear as day, etc., is actually isn't when you know what goes on in the lives of junior doctors. It's like a lot of things. It's easy to talk the talk and sound simple whilst doing very little. I'd just like to make the point that we wouldn't be having this discussion if doctors hadn't been striking. They wouldn't be getting anywhere. So the value of strikes speaks for itself. But let me
I don't dispute that.
Yeah, sorry, where to start? Shall I talk about offer of more jobs for doctors? The job, I think it's mentioned like 1,000 or something.
4,000 specialty training places overall. But crucially, the prioritisation of British and Irish graduates over foreign international graduates.
Oh, well, let's come to that very briefly. Okay. Wes has been in opposition for many years, this explosion of international doctors. It's literally been an explosion in the last few years, the last government, this one. Nothing has actually happened. We've had words, but nothing has actually happened while doctors...
Well, it's not a retrospective. He's literally saying, we will do this now. He's not saying
That's
we will do this last year or when the Tories were in power.
So why hasn't it been done before?
Well, because the pressure hasn't been brought to bear upon them and the scale of the problem hasn't been properly appreciated. Again, this is a paean to strike action. This is a reminder of why industrial action is good. But I don't think you can say, because he didn't do it in opposition, we can't trust him for saying that he's going to do it now.
No, but he's been, how long have they been in power? 18 months.
Yeah,
and the ratio, that the difficulties of doctors' unemployment have been an explosion waiting to happen. He has known about this.
Yeah, but they called off their strike action after getting the pay rise, Karen, as you know.
Yeah.
So that was the BMA who punted it down the road, the problem, not the health secretary. BMA went out on strike, they got the pay rise, and then they went back to work. They didn't say, sorry, thank you for the pay rise, but we're staying out until we get the prioritisation of British and Irish graduates over international graduates. So you can't have it both ways. Because industrial action is a good thing and it focuses the mind and it can change working terms and conditions. But equally, going back to work has a similar heft, and it was the BMA's decision to go back to work while this problem that you accurately describe remained unresolved.
But what are we saying, that doctors carry on striking until it's resolved? I think it's something that we would expect the health secretary to perhaps been taking action on, and they haven't as yet.
But this is what I mean by trying to have it both ways. As you correctly said, we wouldn't be having this conversation if they weren't on strike. But equally, he isn't going to address a grievance that they have gone back to work. They got the pay rise, they went back to work. I'm not picking a side here. I actually have enormous sympathy for the resident doctors. I just have a little bit less sympathy for your position as you're laying it out this morning.
I'm sorry, I'm probably not being very clear. I think what I'm saying is, why isn't this being addressed? As a country, we're training doctors in the NHS, and population, we're sending our children to be trained as doctors, and we have a health secretary who's still, as we speak, prioritising or making it very difficult for those doctors to get jobs with the influx of foreign doctors as we speak. That's the health secretary's job.
I think he's addressing that. I mean, better late than never is a bit mealy-mouthed. I grant you that. But resident doctors could get, this is according to the BMJ, the British Medical Journal, 4,000 more training posts and Royal College examination and member fees covered. This is if they go back to work. And they can postpone that decision until January, which is part of the conversation we're having about the political wisdom of what he's done this morning, as well as prioritisation for UK medical graduates for training places under a new deal proposed by the government. So you like what he's proposing, you'll just cross... that it hasn't happened already.
I don't trust I'm not an expert, but one thing I don't... for example, the new jobs, I understand from the medics and the chatter about it, a lot of these are redesignation of existing jobs, which won't help them progress up the chain. As you know, doctors, they do a full day's work, an incredibly difficult day's work, and they're always going home to study for exams and their next training post. To get promotion in a speciality, you have to keep doing blocks of, say, 3 to 4 years and reapplying for new jobs. And to get those jobs, you have to basically have attended loads of courses, you have to show research that you've done, you have to pass huge exams all in your own time at your own expense at the moment, and you basically
exam fees are going to be subject to reimbursement, so again he's addressing that. And
it's,
I suppose, what I'd say to you on the question of trust, I suppose if I were Wes Streeting, I'd simply say, did they get the pay rise we promised last time?
can I say about the pay rise?
Only after you answer my question. I'm late for the. Did they get the pay rise that was promised last time?
They got the pay rise, but they're
so
still.
So why don't you trust them?
Because they're still being paid less than the assistant standing next to them, the physician assistant.
But that's not what the industrial action was about the first time round. They accepted the offer on the table. And listen, I hope my mum would speak up for me with as much passion and clarity as you speak up for your child. But I have got a lot of resident doctors who are warm towards what Wes Streeting has done thus far, who were not as in favour of this round of industrial action as they were the previous one, and who I suppose we can join at the dining table, Karen, as we all tuck into a nourishing plate of wait-and-see pie. So it's funny that in the space of two calls, you go from someone championing the integrity to somebody questioning it. And I'm equally sympathetic to both positions. I just don't know what you judge Wes Streeting by in terms of good faith, except whether or not he's delivered on the last things he promised to deliver the last time he met the BMA halfway and presided and negotiated a settlement that saw them go back to work. Considerably better rewarded than they were before they went out on strike. If I've missed anything there, I apologise. It's 10:49.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall.
With the Work and Pensions Secretary, Pat McFadden. Do you see it as your mission, as your job, to reforming welfare, to cutting welfare?
Changing people's life stories should be part of this argument, not just looking at a spreadsheet of income.
I can just be clear with the country, it will mean cutting people's benefits.
I'm not going to rule things in or rule things out.
Why?
Today. Because I want to wait for
we can see the sustainability figures. You've said yourself that in the long term it's not sustainable, so therefore it must mean logically that we must spend at some point less money on individual benefits.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall. Sunday morning from 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirement for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
My beans have been to Mexico. They once went to Peru. My beans, they flew to Portugal, then went to Tuvalu. My beans were with me in Italy, then came with me to Greece. I slurped their sauce on Spanish shores. I nibbled them in Nice. My Heinz beans have seen the world. They've travelled far and wide because they are, as we all know, too good to leave behind.
Okay, let me stop you there, sir. You still have to check them into the hold.
Oh, all right then. Honestly.
Beans means Heinz.
If I need an eye test, I don't go to Specsavers.
One thing you won't see at Specsavers is me.
Do I go?
Yes!
I mean, no. Me? I don't go to Specsavers. Nor you, eh, Spike?
Should have gone to Specsavers. Nah.
Hi, Specsavers. Here for your eye test.
They come to me instead.
Come in. Kettle's on. Oh,
thank you.
If you can't go to Specsavers unaccompanied, we could come to you. See if you're eligible at specsavers.co.uk/home visits.
With Lloyd's Home Insurance, there's £50,000 to be won. When you cover the glassware, no one's actually allowed to use. Or the garden shed, a.k.a. your fortress of calm. Rated excellent on Trustpilot. You can be confident with your cover when you take out a new home insurance policy and be in for a chance to win £50,000. Get a quote with Lloyds today. Buy a new home insurance policy direct from us by the 31st of December 2025. Offer T's and C's apply. Policy terms, limits and exclusions apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
10:52 is the time. I don't. Does this sound to you like a mystery hour question? Because if it is, we might do it next week. But have you seen the story about how much it's going to cost to go to football games at the World Cup next year in the United States, or indeed in Canada or Mexico? The figures are actually staggering, even by the standards of how expensive football can be in the modern day. Although, obviously, as a kid of Mr. Harriers fan, I'm very rarely at the sharp end of price gouging or particularly expensive tickets. In fact, they let kids in at Agbara for £1 a pop a lot of the time, which is lovely, encouraging a whole new generation of football fans. They won't be doing that in the United States next year, letting children in at £1 a pop in order to build up more love for the game. So you're looking at, for the cheapest tickets for the group games, are £165. But in the I don't, not entirely impossible event of England getting to the final, the tickets are going to cost more than £3,000. That's more than five times what they cost at the last World Cup finals in Qatar. And the question I wondered about, whether it might be part of Mystery Hour, we didn't break the website yesterday. They must have a much bigger one. I think we broke Wren's. I was thanking Wren of Wren's Pantry for the lovely Indian spices that she sent me for Christmas. And then I was trying to flog some Mystery Hour games by sending you over to mysteryhour.co.uk because we have the brand new travel game, the James O'Brien's Mystery Hour Travel Edition. It's in a tin. We didn't break the website. Loads and loads of satisfied customers. And you can, of course, be one of them. Christmas just around the corner. But we didn't break the website. But is it a mystery? Our question, where does all that money go? Do we actually know? How can it something go in price suddenly in a space of 4 years to five times more than it was last time it was on the market? That kind of price inflation seems to me to be stunning. Look, some of the money goes to the venue. But how much does it cost to go to a normal game in a US stadium? To go and watch it'd just be American football, would it? Baseball diamonds are different, aren't they? I don't know. Don't at me on this. But where does all the money go? FIFA will get a big slice, of course. They've just been sucking up to Donald Trump in the most hideous of fashions. And then the venue would get something. But how on earth can prices have gone up by so much? If I don't get an answer to that by close of play today, I may, and I remember, which, let's be honest with each other, is entirely unlikely, then we will stick it on Mystery Hour next week. Back to the strike, back to the resident doctors, back to Wes Streeting and the cautious suggestion that he's handling all this rather well. Indeed, extremely well. First sort of naysayer a moment ago. Omar in Hackney is on the line. Omar, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Carry on.
I don't think Wes Streeting comes off as genuine in pretty much any of his proposals, really. He's repeatedly called us delinquents as well, and doesn't retract on his moaning mini remarks when he spoke to Nick earlier on.
That's the leadership, isn't it, of the BMA? That's not the average doctor. That's not the average resident doctor that he's talking about.
No, but Nick did clarify that doctors were also part of the BMA, and he still doubled down on it.
Yeah.
And in regards to, well,
It's an important clarification. Even the delinquency, the juvenile delinquency comment, which he hasn't retracted and which he stands by, is directed very, very much at the BMA leadership. So, of course, you're entitled to feel that he's tarring you with that brush, but he could equally argue that he isn't.
Sure. The other side, really, is the offer that he's making. And it's quite hard to take that in good faith, especially with when the previous deal was struck with the resident doctors, where it was acknowledged on the paper that this wouldn't be acceptance, that this is full pay restoration and doctors still have some grievances regarding that. But then ever since then, all we've heard really is, well, you've received your pay offer. Why are you complaining now? And he does multiple times say he just can't understand why we're striking, which kind of baffles me, really.
Well, again, you just stick a now in that sentence, don't you? I mean, it is a dream to restore, to achieve full pay restoration, to bring you back to, although, as you will know, there's some dispute over which date you should use as the benchmark for equivalence for pay restoration. The argument from the government, and it's the one that Thor in Waltham Forest put forward, is simply that we can't do it now. We obviously can't afford it now. Just stick your head out the window.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. And a part of the way that you would move forward from that is getting a multi-play deal. But in any of the conversations, the government, Wes especially, has just rejected any form of that. And I'm pretty sure most of my doctor colleagues would agree with a multi-pay deal that is credible. But that just seems to have gone out the window. I mean, that would just stop the strikes from a pay aspect just there and then. But unfortunately,
but that's
that
capitulation,
really
isn't it? I mean, that's rarely how things end. Industrial action usually ends with negotiation. Nobody, you start off with a demand in very low expectation of getting it. A lot of doctors were telling me last week, a lot of junior doctors, resident doctors were telling me last week that the pay was actually not the big driving force for them, and that if he were to come across with the kind of offer that he's come across with regarding exam fees, Royal College membership fees, specialty training places, the full-time allowances, that then they would be satisfied. You are clearly not one of those resident doctors.
No, I mean, it would only affect a subset of resident doctors that are in training. The other doctors that are SAS doctors or the doctors that are locally employed, it just wouldn't affect them at all. They wouldn't get any reimbursement from the fees for examinations. They wouldn't get any reimbursement for membership fees because we're just not part of that club.
And then you lead me back to the figure that I find almost impossible to believe: 40,000 applicants for 10,000 specialty training places that won't none of what he's announced is real. Well, except the prioritisation of domestic graduates over international graduates, but that's not going to give 30,000 people the jobs that they want overnight. So if Wes Streeting were here, mm-hmm. what would he have to say at the very least, like your lowest possible offer, in order for you not to continue with your intention to strike?
I mean, I think it would have to be multifactorial, really. I mean, there would have to be, in terms of pay, I'm sure the BMA membership, they would be a lot better at...
So you won't allow him to detach the pay negotiations from the other issues. You will strike as long as there is no more pay on the table.
I think that is one factor. The other factors that have become quite strong as time has gone on is the training that is offered to the UK population, really, and the other doctors that contribute to it. I am also quite baffled about the figure that he mentions that it's one in four that will be reduced to one in two, where even just before this call, when I went on to the previous year cycles ratios, there were numbers like one in 13 for anaesthetics, one in 73 for cardiothoracics, and I'm quite confused as to where he had gotten.
Well, that's one of the ones where he should have rung him, not me, isn't it? But again, off the top of my head, I mean, it's possible that you're going to have, when you're doing an average, you're going to have high numbers at one end and then very low numbers at the other end. I think
even if you were to do a simple Google search from what the applicant ratios were, if you were to just even eyeball the ratios, you yourself would be quite baffled, and even the members of the public encourage them.
I spend my life in a state of bafflement, and the NHS has no prescription for that. But before you go, how do you deal with this? Public opinion. Hang on. Can you answer the question before I've asked it? Opinion polling has got support for or opposition to this. And remember, you had public support last time out. Opposition now is roughly 53-38 against. And that's a nightmare scenario for everybody, patient and practitioner alike.
That is quite unfortunate. I'll be honest, it's quite... It's something that doesn't really come into my equations, really, especially the reason why it really is when I'm faced with unemployment constantly, even though I'm in employment right now, this isn't guaranteed. So if we're not in a training post, then we're in a never-ending cycle of 6-month fixed terms, 12-month fixed terms. And so the moment you're in a job, you're already thinking about, well, am I going to be in here for the next 6 months?
Yeah.
Am I going to be there after?
And there's nothing on the table that addresses that.
No, absolutely nothing at all.
That is something everyone should care about. I mean, it's not, and as we've established, the difficulty in separating the pay demands from the rest of it is acute. And it's not necessarily improved by the way the conversation is being conducted. But I'm glad you were listening. I'm grateful for your input, and at least some of the gloss has been knocked off the earlier analysis of what the health secretary was doing. Although, and Omar's very honest to say, it doesn't really bother him what the public think, and arguably, nor should it, because you want him to be good at looking after you when you go into hospital, not necessarily relying upon your ability to crunch political moments. But the support for Wes Streeting, I think, is probably higher than ever among patients, potential and actual. And higher than before among resident doctors, which again, in political terms, has to count as a win. I think, again, when we return to this subject, as we possibly will next week, you can explain to me in greater detail why I'm wrong. It is 11:02.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has warned patients could die if a doctor's strike in England goes ahead. He's told LBC that NHS hospitals are facing their worst pressure since the pandemic because of a surge in flu cases. Resident doctors are voting on a new government offer, which could put a stop to next week's walkout. Mr. Streeting made a direct appeal to medics during this morning's Call the Cabinet on LBC.
We've made a lot of progress together, not just on pay and on jobs, but on the NHS itself. Don't put that recovery at risk. Don't make lives of your colleagues harder next week, and don't put the lives of patients at risk.
London's police chief has dismissed claims the capital is unsafe as complete nonsense. Sir Mark Rowley was asked on LBC about Donald Trump's latest attack against London and its mayor, Sir Sadiq Khan.
There's no no-go areas. That's completely false.
Is that fake news?
I think how anybody in America can suggest the UK is violent is completely ridiculous. I think the murder rate, the homicide rate in London is lower than every single US state. It's lower than all their big cities. I think the murder rate in New York, last time I looked, is about three or four times higher than it is in London, sort of per capita.
He's also confirmed Scotland Yard is looking into the findings of an LBC investigation. We revealed earlier this week a former officer was allowed to retire while being investigated over grooming allegations. Sir Mark says the Met's handling of the case in 2012 is being double-checked. A British woman who killed a man while riding an e-scooter has been jailed for 4 years in Australia. Alicia Kemp, who is 25 and from Redditch, was over the alcohol limit when she struck the father of two in Perth in May. Britain's economy was in decline for a second month running in October. Analysts had been expecting a slight rebound, but official figures show GDP fell by 0.1% month on month. The Shadow Chancellor, Sir Mel Stride, says it's going backwards.
This is because of the government's choices. If you load up taxes on businesses, borrow and spend vast amounts of money, stoke inflation, keep interest rates higher for longer as a consequence, I'm afraid this is what happens.
The Treasury says it is determined to defy the forecasts on growth. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 97.31. That's up 23. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather more settled for most places with some good sunny spells, but rain in central and eastern England and some blustery showers in the northwest. A high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
This Christmas at Tesco, get a sharing bag of Doritos Chilli Heatwave for just £1.45, down from £2.50 with your Tesco Club card. Finding great prices, that's what makes it Christmas. Tesco, every little helps. Majority of large stores, Doritos 180 grams and 2nd of January. Club card or app required.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Eleven oh six is the time, and remember when I used to talk to you all the time about magic eyes, the magic eye illusions, the things that if you were around in the sort of 90s, you'd have these pages, these pads of optical illusions. You'd stare at these sort of weird patterns and shapes on a page, and if you stared at it for long enough, then an image would come into view. I don't know how they work. Like a train, a steam train would suddenly appear in the midst of all these fractals and apparently random shapes and squiggles. I feel like that on a good day. I feel like we're looking at something which appears to be quite confusing and disparate and unclear. And if we look at it together, and together is crucial here, if we look at it together for long enough, then it will come into focus. And I'm pretty close today. I've not got it entirely clear. Simon Marks is very helpful at moments like this. But here are some stories that I think speak to the same moment in our history, in our island history. The first you just heard in the bulletin is Sir Mark Rowley addressing the, obviously ridiculous lies of Donald Trump not just, of course, about London, but about the whole of Europe. But I speak to you every morning from London. I live in London. I have lived in London since 1991 and will continue to for the foreseeable future. And therefore, and it is also our capital city. So, you know, wherever you are, in England at least, many, many roads lead to London. And, you know, in the context of the United Kingdom, London remains by far the biggest and most economically significant mass of people on this, or on this land, in this country, in these countries. I've been looking at the fractals. I've been looking at the patterns for a long time, trying to work out where this comes from. And I still don't 100% get it. I'm getting obviously a lot closer. Some of the point is it's a tapestry of answers. And I've got some of the threads, or it's a patchwork quilt and I've got some of the patches, but I haven't got all of them. What is most extraordinary to me is the way in which the President of the United States of America has essentially become a parrot of the kind of obviously toxic white supremacist lies that started to swill over Twitter under the previous ownership, but under the previous ownership, of course, they would generally be excised and removed, sometimes too late. But under Elon Musk's ownership, Twitter has become a silo for toxic white supremacist lies. Profoundly racist tropes go utterly unchallenged, and the lying is off the absolute charts. And now Donald Trump is doing the same thing. And it seemed to me fairly obvious in the run-up to Brexit, but then afterwards when, you know, everybody got what they wanted, and yet they stayed very, very angry. And as many people who were paying attention could have told them, and did tell them at the time, the immigration figures, for example, went up, not down, because of some rather obvious factors. All the people who thought that they were voting for Brexit in order to get rid of the foreigners were, I mean, they were stupid on two fronts. They were stupid for believing the liars that lied to them, and they were stupid for not realizing that the opposite would be true. And I remember the first time somebody told me, and they really knew what they were talking about, that a lot of the accounts that were peddling this sort of nonsense were going to be coming out of St. Petersburg bot farms. I was a little bit skeptical about that. I sort of found it, why would they go to that trouble? Of trying to influence things. And the answer is actually blindingly obvious. If we are your enemy, then the more division and disruption there is among our populations, the better it is for you. So if you can actually get a country to pull out of the European Union, if you're in the Kremlin, that's a huge, huge win. Yeah, it's no coincidence that the kind of politicians most obviously associated with getting us out of the European Union are in many cases exactly the same politicians who were either taking bribes from Kremlin stooges or parroting the lines of people taking bribes from Kremlin stooges without apparently having to be bribed themselves. I suppose in Nigel Farage's case, the fact that he's made no secret of his adoration of Vladimir Putin, his profound admiration for Vladimir Putin, should have set off rather more alarm bells than it did, but here we are. So why would you want to disrupt a relatively peaceful liberal democracy? Answer, because peaceful liberal democracies make a mockery of everything you try to inflict upon your own people. And I always got that with regard to the Kremlin. As I say, it took me a while, but once you understand it, you understand it. And you use social media to persuade people into positions that are not logical. So your nan voted for, particularly if she's Welsh, she possibly voted for Brexit because she saw the films that were punted to her Facebook page by Cambridge Analytica that kind of made it look like in the event of us leaving Brexit, you would never have to wait for an operation at the hospital. The ethnic minority doctors and nurses would somehow be miraculously replaced by people who looked like they'd stepped out of the Von Trapp family on The Sound of Music, and nobody would ever be ill again. I mean, the state of some of that propaganda was off the flipping charts. You could get your head around that because the Kremlin was our enemy, right? I appreciate not everybody acknowledges or agrees with that, looking at you, Nige. But for most of us, the Kremlin was our enemy. And the way in which you could understand those desperate attempts to divide us and to sow all sorts of hideous division was clearly a big win for our enemies. Sadiq Khan, when he started coming into the studio to do his conversations, is to take your calls. The vitriol, it was the first time I saw it seep off social media onto messages. There's a big difference between sticking something on social media, I think, and sending a specific message in the hope that somebody sees it. Maybe there's not. It's difficult to know when you spend your life with your head above parapets. But the vicious, utterly dishonest hatred that was on display whenever Sadiq Khan came into the studio, and the lies about everything from no-go zones to Sharia law to the number of Muslims in London somehow explaining how he could get elected, none of which stands up to even the vaguest mathematical scrutiny. But I took it seriously on his behalf, but I didn't take it seriously as a threat to my country. It was a threat to him, but I didn't take it seriously as a threat to my country because it was so obviously rollicks. I mean, what would you take seriously, a threat to your country posed by people who insist that the earth is flat? Would you take seriously a threat to the peacefulness of your nation or the safety of your capital city from people who believed that the moon was made of cheese or that you could catch COVID from a phone mast? No, of course you wouldn't take it seriously until you should. And when should you take it seriously? Well, the short answer to that is when the leader of the free world, when Donald Trump joins in and starts echoing precisely the sort of rhetoric that used to be the preserve of Billy Buncher numbers with a bulldog avatar. I got a complaint the other day about mentioning bulldogs in this context. It's a bulldog avatar. Bulldogs are lovely animals, but the British bulldog as an avatar is beloved of people who are furiously hard of thinking quite often. Let's say they've got 48 flags, often upside down in their profile. And that kind of rhetoric, some of those people were real. I'm not suggesting for a minute that they're all inventions of Peter St. Petersburg troll farms. But the rhetoric was so rancid and so obviously daft that you didn't take it seriously. Even after Brexit, when it sort of ramped up and moved focus, and having come out of the European Union, even as enthusiasm for membership in every other member country went up as a direct consequence of them literally watching what was happening to us online, if you were British-based, online, it just shifted effortlessly from attacking those foreigners to attacking those foreigners. And black skin people became more and more the focus, more and more the target for the kind of hatreds and ignorances that had driven us off the cliff of Brexit. And again, you know, even if Elon Musk puts Yaxley Lennon back on Twitter, even if he invites various racists and white supremacists back onto Twitter with open arms and starts applauding them again, you kind of think better of your people. Who could fall for this? Crud. Close. Who could fall for this crud about London? All you have to do is visit. All you have to do is talk to people who live here. And then I started hearing conversations from Americans, oddly, who had a lot of friends who I'm going to loosely describe as educated, college-educated Americans, particularly, oddly, in Silicon Valley. And they started telling me that their friends were expressing concerns about our city. And they were absolutely incredulous. They would say, hang on a minute, you live in San Francisco, or you live in Washington, or you live in New York. How can you possibly think that there's anything going on in London that you need to worry about? And they would say things like, well, hasn't it been overrun by Muslims? Can't you not go to the shops? Isn't it true that they've shut all the pubs? And you'd literally sit here going, what are you, where are you getting this from? What possible source can there be for such obvious and spectacular nonsense? It is genuinely breathtaking how stupid these claims are. And I would once have said how stupid you would have to be to believe them. And I would have meant it. How stupid do you have to be to believe these claims? But a lot of the people that believe them aren't stupid. And the way that Donald Trump spoke about the mayor of London recently would not that long ago have united the entire country in outrage and disgust. But Kemi Badenoch isn't going to condemn him. Nigel Farage certainly isn't going to condemn him. And Keir Starmer, to be honest, was a little bit slow out of the blocks in condemning him. It is entirely of a piece with Billy Buncher numbers on social media with a bulldog avatar and 48 flags in his profile. And those racist lies about London in particular, about Europe in general, those racist lies are providing incredible levels of division and anger. And there'll be people who have fallen for it, who don't think of themselves as having fallen for it. They will say, yes, I am angry, but I'm right to be angry because they've got Shakira Law in Soho. And you'll go, but why don't you talk to someone who lives there or who works there? Why don't you go there? Oh, well, you're just some lefty. You don't know what it's like. You're too rich. So hang on a minute. I thought it was the rich people that couldn't be in London because they were going to get their diamonds stolen or their Rolexes ripped off their wrists. Oh, and look, here is a story about that happening. Therefore, it must be happening to everybody. And Donald Trump joins in. And the country doesn't unite behind the idea that we're doing pretty well in difficult circumstances. Thank you very much. Sling your hook, you weirdo. We don't do it because, well, because what? Because why? Because why? I'm going to take a little break. I've got rather more to say about this than I realised. It will be a phone-in about why are they attacking London. That's what I want you to tell me. But I've got a little bit more to say first. Or, of course, if you've got something brilliant to say, interrupt me. Spare everybody more of my pontifications. Why on earth are people attacking London when everybody who lives here, everybody honest who lives here, loves the place? Look, there's a difference between having a few quid in your pocket and not. If you've got a few quid in your pocket, it's an even better place to live than it is if you haven't. But none of these racists on Twitter are saying the distribution of wealth in London is appalling. Poor people deserve more. None of them are saying that, right? I'm saying that. A little bit of distribution. I'd like to have seen my income tax go up, for example, as I've told you on a few occasions, but it hasn't. So, hey-ho, on we go. But in terms of why are these people, and why are British people joining in? So there are two questions for you. The first is, why does Donald Trump keep attacking London, and Sadiq Khan in particular, when his electoral record is, I mean, unimpeachable, unlike the president, who's actually impeached? But why? Why is it happening? Because I could make sense of it when it was our enemies doing it online in the hope of sowing division and dishonesty. Why is the President of America joining in with what was once the preserve of St. Petersburg trot farms, bot farms, white supremacists and just sort of racist grifters on social media? Why is he doing it? And why are so many British people joining in? Why are so many British people joining in? Hit the numbers now. You will get through. 0345 6060973 is the number you need. For the avoidance of doubt, I've lived in this city since 1991 in various different areas. I currently live in Brentford, which is a top of the league in terms of multiculturalism and diversity. I work in the middle of the West End. I go out about six or seven times a month at this time of year, late at night in the West End. I have dinners, theatre trips, walking through public transport. I go everywhere by public transport. So I know what I'm talking about. And yet there are British people in largely presumably in rural or smaller towns and cities who think that they can rely better upon the testimony of some racist liar who's never been to London. A number of these far-right accounts that turned out to be coming from the subcontinent the other day was extraordinary, and yet that made perfect sense to me. I get why they're trying to do it. They're making a few quid out of it. But why are so many Brits joining in? And why on earth is the President of the United States attacking our capital city when anybody who can count, as Mark Rowley pointed out this morning, anybody who can count can see that it is measurably and infinitely safer than pretty much every American city you care to mention? What, I would ask you, is going on? It's 11:21.
This is LBC.
If I need an eye test, I don't go to Specsavers.
One thing you won't see at Specsavers is me.
Do I go?
Yes!
I mean, no. Me, I don't go to Specsavers. Nor you, eh, Spike?
Should have gone to Specsavers. Nah.
Hi, Specsavers. Here for your eye test.
They come to me instead.
Come in. Kettle's on. Oh,
thank you.
If you can't go to Specsavers unaccompanied, we could come to you. See if you're eligible at specsavers.co.uk/home visits.
Waitrose presents...
Hello. Good to see you.
Festive Fizz Offers. One host raises a glass to her friend's new beginnings. Starring fresh and fruity San Leo Prosecco.
To your lovely new place.
Rich, creamy night timber.
To your promotion.
And Bollinger, with notes of roasted apple.
happened to you? Finally passing your driving test.
Seventh time lucky.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected lines and stores subject to availability. Prices may vary in Channel Islands at the Waitrose and Partners and Concessions.
Take the world's best snooker players. One of the most unpredictable seasons. Add the electric atmosphere of Alexandra Palace. It can only be the 2026 Johnston's Paint Masters. Could it be Sean Murphy, Judd Trump, Neil Robertson, or world champion Zhao Zingtong, who takes the trophy? One thing's certain. Nothing beats the Johnston's Paint Masters. Live. Enjoy our biggest ever fan zone. Watch in style from VIP sofas. Book now. WST.TV/tickets.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
23 minutes after 11. Do you remember when Barack Obama explained what America's response to Brexit would be? When the President of the United States of America said, in the event of our ally doing this thing, our position would be this. Who is better qualified to tell us what the United States of America is going to do in a theoretical future scenario than the President of the United States of America? He was telling the truth. He was describing accurately his understanding of a situation. And he was speaking from a position of concern and care. He was speaking from a position of allyship. And most people responded quite sensibly by going, crikey, he paints a fairly unattractive picture. We probably shouldn't vote for this thing that he's urging us or encouraging us not to vote for. But a particular constituency of people in this country went nuts. Started screaming about how a president of the United States should never get involved in British politics. How a foreign politician had no business. And it's an insane position to adopt. A foreign politician should have no business telling us about what their foreign policy would be in the event of us doing something. It's so insane. I didn't even realise how insane it was at the time. But imagine how those people, if they had an honest bone in their body, imagine if people who were objecting furiously to the idea of Barack Obama telling us uncomfortable truths about America's reaction to something like Brexit, imagine how utterly apoplectic they would be if they had an honest bone in their body about this.
Terrible, Mayor. And look at the crime you have in London. My mother loved London. She loved that city. She'd always talk about, that was a different London than you have today. Yeah. Today you have people being stabbed in the ass, or worse. But no, it's crazy.
It's true. It's awful. Crazy. It is. It feels much safer here.
Your mayor is a disaster. Okay, I can tell. I don't know him. I don't even know what. If you put him there, I wouldn't even know who he was. I can tell you he is a disaster.
It's a pure Trump, isn't it? I don't know who he is. I wouldn't know who he was, but I know he's a disaster. I presume, was that interview conducted in Washington, D.C.? I forget what the statistic is, whether you're 22 times or 32 times more likely to be murdered in Washington, D.C. than you are in London. I mean, it's insane. It's absolutely insane. It is your racist Twitter users in the White House. Maybe that's the answer. Maybe it is just Occam's razor. Here you go. David says, Occam wants to know, James, if it could just be because he is a racist loudmouth on social media. It can't be that simple, says O'Brien, again, when very often things do turn out to be that simple. So then the head of the Met, Sir Mark Rowley, is compelled to respond. Great questioning from Nick Ferrari this morning. And the head of the Met did exactly what you would hope he would do in these sort of circumstances.
So there's no no-go areas. That's completely false.
Is that fake news?
I think how anybody in America can suggest the UK is violent is completely ridiculous. I think the murder rate, the homicide rate in London is lower than every single US state. It's lower than all their big cities. I think the murder rate in New York, last time I looked, is about three or four times higher than it is in London, sort of per capita. Whilst I make this point, the homicide rate in London is lower than it is in Toronto. It's lower than Paris. It's lower than Brussels. It's lower than Berlin. This is a safe city. I'm not going to pretend it's perfect. It's a safe city. Injury violence in London is lower than the other cities in the UK. And I think this trend of trying to rubbish London, some of which is driven by politics, we need to sort of, we who are proud Londoners need to fight back about it, because there's lots to be proud of about London. Clearly, there are some crime issues that we're tackling, and it's not perfect, but I'm proud of the progress we're making at reducing crime.
So it is people who are enemies of our state who are peddling these lies. That's what you do. If you're an enemy of a state, you peddle lies about that state. Unfortunately, when the head of the Met asks for or points out the necessity of pushing back or fighting back against it, you can be fairly confident that Kemi Badenoch's Conservative Party won't be fighting back against this. Nigel Farage's Reform UK won't be fighting back against this. They would rather either absorb and accept or even perhaps disseminate the lies. And tragically, client journalists who are far too close to either Kemi Badenoch's Conservative Party or Nigel Farage's Reform UK are not going to fight back either, despite all the evidence. I would play that again, but I'd want to at least take one call before half past. I think this subject is the one that animates me most at the moment. I really do. And it goes hand in hand with lies on every level. This will go up as a clip on TikTok. I had a look at another clip about me defending London on TikTok the other day. It's something I need to fix. It started popping up in my own algorithm. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. But the lies, I mean, just about little old me, were extraordinary. Just the way in which you can't actually tackle the facts, so you'll start telling lies about me. What were the lies that I saw about me? It's like the good old days of Twitter. People claiming I didn't grow up on a farm. Where does that come from? The idea that I didn't grow up on a farm just outside Kidderminster in Worcestershire. Literally, tractors parked 200 yards from my front door. My dad obviously wasn't a farmer, as I've told you a million times. He was a Daily Telegraph journalist, but we lived on a farm, in the old farmhouse, in the middle of God knows how many acres of farmland. But you can't tackle the things that I'm saying about the lies you believe about London, so you claim I didn't grow up on a farm. My favourite was probably the one that said, I drink whiskey for breakfast. Again, you sort of go, here's a bloke laying down some facts that you have somehow failed to understand. How on earth are you going to deal with the fact that you have been incredibly stupid? Well, I think he must be drunk. He must be drunk, this bloke telling the truth, because I prefer the liars. It's up there a while ago. Someone pointed this out to me. People were claiming I went to my wife's hen night online. And I could not for the life of me work out where this was coming from. And I remember I told you, I think last year, that I bailed on my own stag night when a couple of my mates wanted to go to a rather insalubrious joint in Soho. And Mrs. O'Brien was out with friends nearby, not on her hen night. So I texted her and said, when are you heading home? Let's go home together. And suddenly in the world of racist online weirdos, that becomes me going on my wife's hen night, which happened 2 weeks later in Paris. So it would have been a very difficult thing to do. So, you know that these people are liars. You know that they have an allergy to the truth. But you also know that they think they're patriots. They think they're patriotic. How can it be patriotic to tell lies about your own country? Particularly your own capital, and especially your own mayor. I do not know. So, oh, crikey, I said I was going to take a call before the news, but you probably didn't believe me anyway. Here's Thomas Watts with your headlines.
The Health Secretary has told LBC he is genuinely fearful for the NHS as it faces a doctor's strike and surge in flu cases. Wes Streeting has warned medics that patients may die if they refuse to call off a five-day walkout in England. The Metropolitan Police Commissioner has rejected Donald Trump's claims about crime in London. Sir Mark Rowley's told LBC suggestions made in the US about no-go areas in the capital are politically motivated. Businesses and consumers' pre-budget jitters have been blamed for another fall in economic growth. Most economists had been expecting an uptick in GDP, but the economy contracted by 0.1% in October. LBC weather, more settled for many with sunny spells, but rain in central and eastern England with some blustery showers in the northwest, a high of 12 degrees.
This is LBC. Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
A Southern Train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear All Change Please, you'll know you already have. Go with your flow and save with advance tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers. On my birthday. I'm 95 minutes late, but it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode, your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop, plus free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60. Max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Oh, 32 minutes after 11. There's more, but I will press pause on my own contemplations for a moment and just remind you of the question, because you could be very easily forgiven for not knowing. The question is this. It took me a while, but I got my head around why obvious enemies, declared enemies of our state, would want to spread lies about our country. So, and I understand how racism works and how seductive it can be, but lies about the UK in general, Europe in general, the UK in particular, and London very specifically, and London's mayor very specifically, that have their seeds in either Russian bot farms or propaganda arms of regimes that wish us harm, that wish us ill. They want us to be divided. Why is the President of the United States joining in, and why are so many British people joining in? 0345 6060 973. Sophie's in Burgess Hill. Sophie, what would you like to say?
You're right, I have actually completely lost my train of thought. I apologize. I am very passionate about this subject. I think that there's huge division in this country. But what I will say about London is that it is beautifully multicultural and diverse. The diversity of London has taught us a lot about being compassionate, a lot about the understanding on the bigger world outside our country, something that I think the US often lacks.
But historically, most US people, certainly most educated US people, would have an enormous soft spot for London. And why would they join in? There's two things going on here, isn't there? It's contempt for the con men and compassion for the con. There are people who are disseminating lies about our city, who must know that they are lies. Donald Trump, the person interviewing him, they know that this isn't true, because they can count. And then there's the people falling for it. So I don't know how easy it is to distinguish between the two, but why would somebody who is not supposed to be an enemy of our state join in with these lies?
Because everybody's struggling. What we're seeing across the world now is we're seeing a bigger gap between the rich and the poor. The middle class is disappearing, and people are trying to figure out why. They're blaming international people. They're blaming immigrants. It's the them and the us. And that is what Donald Trump, Nigel Farage, is looking to push. That there's a reason why, other than the rich people, why we are all suffering.
So what's the end game? If you were to say, what's the plan here? Because with Putin's sponsored propaganda, it's easy to see what the end game is. The more fractured and the more divided his enemies are, the stronger his position becomes. But what's the end game for somebody like, why would Trump be wanting London to be on the hook for this stuff? Economic inequality in the United Kingdom's not his problem. He's not got anything to worry about on that front.
Well, the world is global, isn't it? Yes, we're very far away from America, but the people with money are much closer to each other than we realize, even though they're halfway across the world. Mm. It's maintaining control and taking away, little by little, the freedom that we have. So by further supporting Donald Trump and further supporting his rhetoric, he's going to make our lives better. He's going to make
the Americans,
better.
If you don't do what I do, then you will end up like this. And then you point out that, well, we're not anything like the things that you say that we're like. And that's where the British Lord Haw-Haws, the British traitors, not just the ones that take bribes from Kremlin stooges or their mates and colleagues, but people, ordinary members of the public. Is it simply a hatred of a brown-skinned mayor that informs this vitriol? Why would you join in with attacks on your own country? And that is literally the definition of treachery. And yet it's happening right across the UK media and right across the political landscape. I think that a lie, particularly a racist lie, but a lie, any lie, a damaging lie about your own country is treachery. If a foreigner is doing it, it is a hostile act. To lie about this country is a hostile act if you are Russian, and indeed if you are American. But why would British people join in? Why would British people join in with it? 0345 6060973. Ned's in Bradfield. Ned, what do you reckon?
Yeah, James, how you doing?
Good. I'm genuinely confused. Some people think I shouldn't be, and some of the answers are quite straightforward, but and I may, after I've spoken to you, extend it to people that we know and try to work out what on earth they get out of this. But why would British people join in with hostile attacks on their own, untrue hostile attacks on their own country?
I've got two theories on this, and actually one of them just came through while I was on hold, actually.
There you go, that's the beauty of a long monologue, mate. It gives you time to...
time to work it out, right? So, the first one I've got for you, it's a good one. It's not mine, I saw it on social media, but somebody said Donald Trump has given people permission to be the worst version of themselves, and that's why his base will never desert him.
Yes.
And that pondered that for me for a minute, and the conversations that we have on the radio and what have you, and I thought, Then the other thing that dawned on me while I was on hold, there is a bit of born here, die here-itis. I mean, I was born in London, but then I moved out, and then I moved back again in my late teens, early 20s, lived there 35 years and moved back out again. James, you don't have to get very far out of London for the social attitudes to change.
No.
You know, hence you'll see a lot of flags on lampposts, you know. So when I moved back up, not far from Cambridge, I remember being in my mid-20s and people were suspicious of me because I've come from that London.
Yes, but it wasn't racist then.
Well, no, but they were a bit like, I putting myself in their shoes, it was a bit like, people sort of moved to big cities for sort of better jobs or adventure or something. Something you did, something I did.
Yes.
You know, we're part of that cohort. And then there's the people that still have to be the night manager in Tesco's and still go out with the girlfriend that they met at school and what have you, which is most of the country. And I just think, you've got this little social bubble. I rang you up a few weeks ago, said that my landlady in the boozer, who's a vegan and does yoga, said that she wouldn't go to London because she had to wear a burqa and it was under Sharia law. And you went, I've not heard. And I went, well, it exists, you know. And I'm only 60 miles away here. I mean, I'm next door to Nigel. And this parish voted Tory.
Well, you're not, mate. He's never in Clacton. You'd be safe there. It's the best place to be.
Yeah, well, true. But this parish also voted the last election. So I'm surrounded by quite well-to-do pensioners and tradesmen, you know, and you go to the pub and it's just sort of, that's the sort of the hum, you know, it's like, that London, you know, that man,
victory, isn't it? For,
you know,
so hand on heart, because I pushed you on this last time and I'm still skeptical. An Essex landlady, she's not just reaching for extreme figures of speech. She truly believes she would have to wear a niqab or a burqa in London.
Yeah.
She doesn't.
Yeah,
I don't believe you.
You know what? I even took a photo just so I could show you. This wouldn't even believe that this would come out of a
human being's mouth. Like, no, well, don't do that. Don't. I understand why, but I wonder how many, because I wonder how big my bubble is. My big, diverse, multicultural bubble living in the parts of London I've lived in. And how many people in your position would be going, no, James, I promise you I believe him. It's going to be according to how London you are, isn't it? If you know the city, people are going to find it very hard to believe that level of bigotry and ignorance exists. And yet, if you're living in it, then you're going to find it quite easy to believe. I might do a quick text about it. Do you believe Ned? Yes or no? 84850 now or WhatsApp 0345 6060973. An Essex landlady who honestly believes that she can't go to London unless she wears a burqa. There'll be Americans who believe it. I don't doubt that for a minute. But somebody in Essex, I'm not ready yet, mate. I'm not ready to buy that. It's too sad. Because it's my town. And it's also my country. And it's suffering in every imaginable way. Ned, take care. I don't think you're lying. I just think she might have been not yanking your chain, but just perhaps reaching for an extremity rather than a fair description of reality. And I think that line about the permission to be the best version of yourself, and that's why the worst version of yourself, and that's why he'll never be deserted by his base, I think that might have been one of mine. Although it's perfectly probable that I didn't say it first. Hannah is in Stukeley in Buckinghamshire. Hannah, what's going on? Why is Trump doing it? And possibly even more urgently, why on earth are British people joining in?
Hi, James. So I actually just wanted to read you an email that I received from a potential US customer last week. So
yes.
My husband and I run a candle company and we make candles named after all the different counties in the UK.
Oh,
so to me, it was quite clear that we're a British company, but we ship all over the world, and she'd emailed about something. So my first exchange with her was to say, we ship from just outside of London. She came back not knowing anything about me and felt perfectly comfortable to say, please unsubscribe me. I'm sorry to say goodbye. And it's so sad what has happened to beautiful England with all the illegal immigrants, trying to prevent that from happening in the USA. And I was completely floored that somebody in an exchange with a stranger would feel comfortable enough to say things like that. And she clearly believes all of this that Trump has been peddling. And I just didn't quite know what to say to her. And actually, I was listening to LBC driving through London on Tuesday, sat in traffic outside Fortnum and Mason when Trump's speech about Sadiq Khan had come out.
Yeah.
And I was looking around just thinking, this is the most beautiful city I've ever spent any time in. And I can't believe that people are believing it, but it's scary that they are.
And there perhaps is the beginnings of a slightly more substantive answer than just he is simply a racist online troll. If he is, as Simon Marks has warned us, minded to declare some sort of state of emergency in the United States of America in the hope of avoiding Democratic elections next year, and we know how he feels about democracies, he hates them because he's trying to subvert it all around the world. I'll get to that story shortly. Then how do you persuade your own population to let you take away their rights and freedoms? Answer, you pretend that you're protecting them from a threat. And if there's no real threat there, you invent one. So you say, look at London and look at the UK. And if we don't declare a state of emergency and cancel all the elections, then we could end up like them.
Yeah, and they fully believe it. But I have noticed a difference in, we've got two shops, one in the Cotswolds and one in Cambridge, and we get lots of American tourists. And the Americans that I have met anyway, that actually leave the US and they come and they visit the Cotswolds and they visit Cambridge, talk completely differently about, I think they're the only ones that can really defend us.
Well, there's, I mean, as Sadiq Khan often points out, Americans are moving here at a rate of knots.
So it's about the ones that never leave that are the ones that believe everything that he says because they've never left. And it's scary.
Yes, it is scary. And why then do you think so many British people join in, including, sadly, politicians now and quite high-profile journalists?
I don't know if they're jumping on a bandwagon. I don't know how they can look around London. Obviously, every city has its flaws.
Hey, for sure.
But how you can look around the country and believe it when you're physically here. You know, we're based in rural Buckinghamshire, and when I got that email, I wanted to send her a video of... you know, the farm that we work from. And, you know, it's as if they think illegal immigrants are running through our fields. And it's just, it's madness.
Well, Brexit was a tiny bit like that, I suppose. An awful lot of people in the Daily Mail comments section who lived in some of the least immigrated areas of the United Kingdom were convinced that people were coming for their biscuits at every turn. Do you want to mention the company? What's the Worcestershire Candle? What's the Worcestershire Candle got on it?
The Worcestershire Candle is a black pear and freesia for the Black Pear of Worcester.
Yes.
And yes, we're called the Home County Co. So we've got 40 different county candles and more to come. So
lovely stuff. Yeah. I love that. I mean, that is a sort of almost perfect, isn't it? Perfectly of a piece with one perception of the United Kingdom, of the sort of green and pleasant land, completely at odds with the one that's being perpetrated by the leader of a country that was once our staunchest ally. So we've got a little bit of clarity on why Donald Trump would do it. Because he may well want to terrify or terrorize the American population into a position where he can claim he's protecting them by taking away their rights and freedoms, most obviously their votes. Which, again, I still think is a little bit extreme, but wiser heads than mine, or certainly people more plugged into the American politics than I am, have expressed that view very forcefully and very persuasively. Why on earth would British people join in? Why on earth would British politicians join in with these lies about our mayor here in London, our capital city, if you're listening in the United Kingdom, our country, if you're British? Why would they do it? I genuinely don't know. I get some of the answers and some of the bits, but is there really? I mean, I think there must be. I think I may owe Ned an apology. It's a big majority of people. Who think it's perfectly feasible in the climate described by Hannah and others, it's perfectly feasible for an Essex landlady to somehow believe that if she comes to London, she would have to wear a burqa. I don't know if I'm ready to Oh, boy.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall.
With the Work and Pensions Secretary, Pat McFadden. Do you see it as your mission, as your job, to reforming welfare, to cutting welfare?
Changing people's life stories should be part of this argument, not just looking at a spreadsheet of income.
So can you just be clear with the country? It will mean cutting people's benefits.
I'm not going to rule things in or rule things out.
Why?
Today. Because I want to wait for
we can see the sustainability figures. You've said yourself that in the long term it's not sustainable, so therefore it must mean logically that we must spend at some point less money on individual benefits.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall. Sunday morning from 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirements for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
You weren't supposed to burn the potatoes or invite everyone round at two. We said three. You weren't supposed to fall asleep on the sofa or ask me to marry you. And you weren't supposed to be here. But you are, thanks to the best gift you ever got. And mine is still having you.
When you donate to the British Heart Foundation, you give a gift that keeps on living. Search BHF today and help us fund life-saving research.
If I need an eye test, I don't go to Specsavers.
One thing you won't see at Specsavers is me.
Do I go?
Yes!
I mean, no. Me, I don't go to Specsavers. Nor you, eh, Spike?
Should have gone to Specsavers. Nah.
Hi, Specsavers, here for your eye test.
They come to me instead.
Come in, kettle's on. Oh, thank
you. If you can't go to Specsavers unaccompanied, we could come to you. See if you're eligible at specsavers.co.uk/home visits.
This could be the best Christmas ever. Christmas Cash Call is here with a life-changing £350,000 to be won. Enter this week's draw before 5pm today and you could get a call with £350,000. Christmas Cash Call. Text radio to 822 00 to enter now. Text costs £2.50 plus your standard network charge. 18 plus UK only global network competition. Full rules and free entry at christmascashcall.com.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
11:49 is the time. It's not left wing or right wing, this. A couple of people seem to be confused. It's truth and lies. I have a listen to what Sir Mark Rowley, the Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police, had to say this morning on Nick Ferrari's programme. And remember that, you know, police have a tendency towards authoritarianism. The idea that the Capitol is being portrayed in a very negative light could be used by a dishonest policeman to argue for more powers. Well, you know, I don't think things are quite as bad as he describes, but one of the reasons why I believe that the Home Office should be giving us a lot more money is because we do have quite a lot of problems in London that the President of the United States is alluding to. That you could imagine that happening, right? If you had a slightly less honest commissioner than Sir Mark Rowley. But I'll play you both again. I'll play you Donald Trump lying, and then I'll play you the Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police doing what every patriotic Brit should be doing, which is pushing back against foreign agents lying about our country. How can I even be saying this in 2025? Who would it have to be for your mate with the roundabout painter, or your mate on Twitter? Who would it have to be for them to go, oh, hang on a minute, I don't want to be on his side of this argument? Because in a way, it's already Vladimir Putin. Farage has got no bones about saying how much he admires Vladimir Putin, but does your Uncle Bob feel that way? If it was Kim Jong-un coming out with this stuff about London, would your Uncle Bob be going, oh, hang on a minute, maybe I'll check for myself? If it was, I don't know, if it was the child catcher out of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang coming out with this stuff about London, do you think your Uncle Bob would go, oh, maybe I should give my head a wobble and actually speak to people that live in London? Who would it have to be, do you think, for all the Brits that are going along with these racist, treacherous lies to give their head a big enough wobble to remember what day it is and where they actually live, and crucially, what it's like? So here is the President of the United States of America talking out of his, forgive me, ass.
Terrible mayor, And look at the crime you have in London. My mother loved London. She loved that city. She'd always talk about that was a different London than you have today. Yeah. Today you have people being stabbed in the ass or worse. But no, it's crazy.
It's true. It's awful. Crazy. It is. It feels much safer here.
Your mayor is a disaster. Okay, I can tell. I don't know him. I don't even know what. If you put him there, I wouldn't even know who he was. I can tell you he is a disaster.
The interviewer, tragically, formerly of this parish. But there you go. I hadn't spotted that the first time around. So here is the Metropolitan Police Commissioner telling some very simple, obvious truths that if you want to double check, you just need to be able to count. And I don't even say that with my tongue in my cheek, because presumably a lot of people, up to and including that interviewer, can't count.
So there's no no-go areas. That's completely false.
Is that fake news?
I think how anybody in America can suggest the UK is violent is completely ridiculous. I think the murder rate, the homicide rate in London is lower than every single US state. It's lower than all their big cities. I think the murder rate in New York, last time I looked, is about three or four times higher than it is in London, sort of per capita. Whilst I make this point, the homicide rate in London is lower than it is in Toronto. It's lower than Paris. It's lower than Brussels. It's lower than Berlin. This is a safe city. I'm not going to pretend it's perfect. It's a safe city. Injury violence in London is lower than the other cities in the UK. And I think this trend of trying to rubbish London, some of which is driven by politics, we need to sort of, we who are proud Londoners need to fight back about it, because there's lots to be proud of about London. Clearly, there are some crime issues that we're tackling, and it's not perfect, but I'm proud of the progress we're making at reducing crime.
And it's not just, of course, the sort of online weirdos. You're going to see it in the Daily Mail, the Daily Express, the Daily Telegraph. There's probably broadcasters. God forbid there might even be current LBC presenters buying into this absolute bilge, this demonstrable bilge. So we've got some theories now on why Donald Trump is doing it. They're not pretty, but they are plausible. Why on earth would anybody British join in with this treachery? Foreign agents talking down our country, lying about our population and our country. Why would British people join in? And I'm tempted to even try to dig into a conversation about how feasible it is that a landlady in Essex can have been reduced to believing that she would have to wear a burqa if she visited Knightsbridge or Camden or Hounslow. Brian's in Horsham. Brian, what would you like to say?
Yeah, I think one of the reasons why the people in this country are attacking places like London, especially London, is that it's multiculturalism that works. I mean, not only have we got a Muslim mayor, you know, and I suppose that probably fits in with their idea that everyone is wearing burqas or everyone's Muslim, so that's why they voted him. But how is it that in London, in Ilford, they're voting West Streeting, who's a white man and who's gay?
Yes.
You know, how multicultural and how woke, I suppose, that is. And I think that's one of the reasons...
Simply unbigoted.
Yes, exactly. You know, how multicultural and how woke is London? And I think some people on the right absolutely hate that, and it seems to work.
So there's there's a narrative of decline, and you have to portray London as failing because it is an affront to, I mean, at its purest form, it's an affront to white supremacism. Not only is it proving every single day that there's no inherent genetic advantage to being white, or that white people can't get along with everybody else and brown people can't get along with everybody else, but we also keep electing a brown-skinned man as mayor, which makes a complete mockery of almost all of the politics that sort of people like Elon Musk subscribe to.
Exactly, and I think that if they can paint it as it's a hellhole and people shouldn't go there, see, and Donald Trump can say that this is what happened if we allow that to happen over here.
Okay, so why the journalists then? Because there's an old adage that I only came across in the last 10 years or so. It wasn't one of the ones I was aware of growing up. But if somebody says it's raining and somebody says it's not, my job is to go outside and see if I get wet and then report back to you, report back to my listeners. How on earth can journalists join in with lies about their own country? Well, I suppose the Daily Mail was rooting for Oswald Mosley and Hitler not that long ago, wasn't it? But why would they not simply report what they see?
I suppose that they want to peddle that lie that multiculturalism doesn't work.
Yeah, and maybe some low-level Islamophobia as well. I remember, what's his name? Goldsmith, the Goldsmith brother, Zach. I remember Zach Goldsmith's mayoral campaign going very, very racist, very, very quickly. And I think to his credit, he was subsequently a bit ashamed of that. But the way in which some journalists went along with it, very, very racist politicking, because Sadiq Khan was an Asian man and a Muslim. And you could see how that worked. So maybe just political opposition, maybe because he's Labour, right-wing people look for anything to hit him with, and because they can't find anything particularly hurtful, they come up with his ethnicity or his religion. I don't know, but why would British people join in with this? New York has a Muslim mayor now, which I imagine is striking terror into parts of the United States of America, the ones that are best served, perhaps, or most served by Fox News. I love is not quite the right word. That landlady, I don't want to sort of mythologize her, but would we be able, do you think, to have an hour talking about people like her? So almost, what does your Uncle Bob believe? 03456060973. Because some of this stuff shocks me, and I do this for a living. As I said, I dip my toe into, is it TikTok? What's the one that's owned by, well, anyway, the stuff that comes up on your Facebook, the reels that come up on there, they're TikToks as well, are they? Or, I don't know, but anyway. LBC still puts up clips of me. I'm not on social media anymore. I'm only on Blue Sky. And I had to look at some of the replies on one of them for the first time in months. And you can persuade people of absolutely anything, but there needs to be something there first, doesn't it? I mean, why would anybody believe an obvious and easily disproved lie unless they needed to? So what does your Uncle Bob believe in the way that this Essex landlady believes, and most of you think this is plausible, not all, but most of you think this is plausible, believe that she would have to wear a burqa to visit London? How widespread is this among our own populations and our own families? Where are you listening to this? Our numbers are great now. I think we've just overtaken Radio 4, would you believe, among, is it 32 to 54-year-olds? Like, the crucial demographic, this programme nationally has just overtaken BBC Radio 4. It's the biggest game in town, full stop. So you could be listening to this in any corner of the country. You could be listening to this thinking that I'm lying to you, couldn't you? You could be thinking, oh, James, no one's falling for this nonsense. I live in, I don't know where you live. I live in the middle of Cheddar Gorge, and I know what London's really like. I live in Tennessee. I know what London's really like. I know Tennessee's not in the UK, before you waste up and sending me a message. I live in Worcestershire. I live in the Cotswolds. I live in the Lake District. I know what London's really like. I live in Essex. I know what London's really like. I haven't been there since 1983 because I'm not going to wear a burqa. But do you see what I mean? How do people end up believing this stuff? And I know how many of you now are shouting Brexit at me. Sometimes feels like I've spent 10 years saying to you, how can people end up believing stuff that's so obviously nonsense? We have to obey their laws. What laws? Oh, I'll get lost. You can prove anything with facts. Can't say you're English in this country anymore without getting arrested. I promise you, you can. No, you can't. Can't go to London without wearing a burqa. I wonder whether Stuart would accept that as a gag. Would Stuart Lee, the patron saint of honesty in these kind of conversations, would Stuart Lee think that was a push too far? I might check in with him afterwards. Does he believe that there is a pub landlady in Essex who honestly thinks she can't go to London without wearing a burqa? Or was she kind of indulging in a little bit of performative racism, or possibly yanking our correspondent Ned's chain because she knows that he's one of the good guys and she's kind of wanted to wind him up? Because that's the other thing you do, when apart from lying, you can't win any arguments. So you say, oh, it's upsetting all the right people. What is? Well, my lies are. Well, hang on a minute. How can your lies upsetting people be a win for you? It's like admitting that you're lying. So, yeah, I don't know. We may. I don't want to talk about anything else. It seems to me the way that Sir Mark Rowley has focused attention on the necessity of pushing back against this seems to be a moment that we should mark properly, and that means at least a couple of hours on it. But if we can get your Uncle Bob If you can get your Uncle Bob and the stuff he genuinely believes about London, that would be wonderful. 03456060973. And I'll read this message out. Thanks a lot, James. I've only got 9 months left in that demographic. Mate, I've only got a month. Well, no, if it's 32 to 54. No, I'm all right, actually. I've got a year and a bit. It's 12:02.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Health Secretary has warned patients could die as a result of a pre-Christmas strike by resident doctors in England. Wes Streeting's told LBC he is genuinely fearful for the NHS as it faces a surge in flu cases. He's agreed the health service is effectively at 1 minute to midnight.
It risks serious harm to patients.
Does it risk death?
I cannot guarantee... Honestly, Nick, I don't want to catastrophise or sensationalise. I cannot sit here and look you in the eye and tell you that no patient will come to harm or fatal harm. I cannot make that guarantee.
The British Medical Association is polling resident doctors in England to see if they are willing to call off the 5-day walkout. The Metropolitan Police Chief, Sir Mark Rowley, has told LBC it is ridiculous for anyone in the US to say Britain is violent. President Trump has claimed even the police won't enter some parts of London. Sir Mark says the capital is not perfect, but the idea of no-go areas is false.
The picture that's been portrayed sometimes about London internationally is not accurate. London is a safe place to come. It's getting safer every day. My officers are working extraordinarily hard, and we as proud Londoners should kick back against the nonsense on the on social media trying to run it down.
The Commission has also confirmed the findings of an LBC investigation are under review. We revealed earlier this week a former officer was allowed to retire while being investigated over grooming allegations. Sir Mark says the handling of the case in 2012 is being double-checked. A 52-year-old man has been found guilty of murdering his wife in a retrial 8 years after being acquitted. Robert Rhodes was originally cleared of murdering his wife Dawn in Surrey 9 years ago, saying he was acting in self-defence. New evidence, a statement from a child witness, was presented to the jury. The Treasury says it is determined to defy the forecasts on growth after another fall in GDP. Figures showed the economy declined by 0.1% in October. Economists, who'd been expecting a slight rebound, have blamed pre-budget uncertainty. Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor is attending his first engagement since being stripped of his prince status, the christening of Princess Beatrice's daughter. Andrew's granddaughter Athena is taking place at St James's Palace. And in the last few minutes, it's been confirmed the author Joanna Trollope has died at the age of 82. She was best known for novels including The Rector's Wife and Daughters-in-Law. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 97.26, so that's up 23. The pound buys $1.33 and the euro 14. LBC weather this afternoon, more settled with sunny spells for many, but rain in central and eastern England with some blustery showers in the northwest, a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Waitrose presents £10 Fine Wines.
A special toast to Alice, finally, home for Christmas.
Oh, yeah, welcome home.
Starring Prince Alexander Cremant de Loire, a balance of pear and fresh green apple. Montecillo Rioja Reserva, with notes of forest fruits and spices. And special guest, Carte de Lune Chambacon Lune, bursting with apple blossom and citrus peel.
This is the wine I was telling you about from
French Vineyard. I know.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected lines and stores subject to availability. Prices may vary in Channel Islands at the Waitrose and Partners and Concessions.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Is the time. So, I mean, this is the question that intrigues me most, and I make no apology for my fascination with the with the mentalities of my fellow Brits. I remain fascinated by the number of people who were persuaded to vote for Brexit, which everybody now recognises was a really stupid thing to do. You've got that version of communism, haven't you? A lot of communists say, well, you don't know that communism isn't brilliant because it's not been tried properly yet. So you've got what you might call Brexit communists. People who insist that Brexit was a great thing to do, but we just haven't tried it right. It's been poorly implemented. But no one says, oh, it's done brilliantly. We're really glad we did it. Literally, nobody says that. If they do say that, you probably call for the nurse. fascinated by how many, so many people, people that I know, people in my family, people I went to school with, people I used to speak to on a daily basis. Well, I probably still do, they just don't speak back. Were absolutely adamant that it was going to be great and going to be this and going to be that. And people believe, it's just the most interesting thing about humans in many ways. I'd say the most interesting things about humans was probably our capacity to love and to think. But from a political point of view, to believe things that are obviously untrue. And so this line that runs effortlessly from Brexit to Donald Trump leads us to this question now. How can people who live here believe lies being told by foreigners about our country? Even that language is beautiful, isn't it? Lies told by foreigners. You're a patriot, right? Yeah, absolutely. What were you doing last night? I was out painting roundabouts, James. No one could question my patriotism. Rule Britannia! Britannia rules the waves! What were you doing last night? I was out painting roundabouts, James. Okay. How do you feel about foreigners telling lies about Britain? Stone them! I hate them. I hate them, James. I hate them. I hate foreigners telling lies about our country. What do you think about Donald Trump? Oh, he's great. We need someone like that here. What do you think about London? Oh, he can't go to London these days. Shakira Law. No goes. Hang on a minute. Those are lies told about our country by foreigners. No, they're not. You woke lefty. That's the truth. I live here. I work here. I use public transport here. I go out at night here. I have daughters here. I have a wife here. I have lived nowhere else since 1991. I will tell you what London is like. Yeah, but I'm not going to believe you, am I? I'm going to believe Donald Trump. Okay. Why? 03456060973. So why? Why do British people join in with this foreign propaganda? This anti-British foreign propaganda. That's it. That's the phrase. Why do British people... And what I'd like to do now, two things. One, I thought might be a little bit too parochial. But looking at the number of people that are doing it anyway, I'm going to do it. And this is one of the most... what's the word that I want? One of the lowest bars I've ever set for a phone-in, okay? But I genuinely think, listening to Mark Rowley's words, that we should do this today. You are not from London, but you visited recently. All right? This is like North Norfolk Digital. I joked this morning that I was going to call the show Mid-Morning Matters this week. Imagine if I was on North Norfolk Digital. I said, anyone been up London lately? Did you have a nice time? Give me a call now on 03456060. I don't know what that accent is. I'm so sorry. Certainly got nothing to do with Norfolk. It's not got a lot to do with humanity, actually, in any way recognisable form. But I mean it. 03456060973. You are not... I mean, I tell you what would be even more interesting. If you actually were a little bit worried about coming to London because of what you've seen on your Uncle Bob's Facebook page, or because of what you've seen on social media, or, I suppose we have to say, because of what you have heard the President of the United States say. You're a little bit worried about coming to London. And you don't have to be. That's not a prerequisite. You could have been supremely confident that London has not changed from the most magnificent city on Earth as long as it has been. But if you've been recently, for the benefit of everybody who is still swallowing this crud coming out of the President's mouth, what was it like? Just give me a quick heads up on what happened when you visited London most recently. Because I can fill my show with people who live here. But in many ways... we're the choir, and I'm preaching to the choir, people who don't live here but have visited. So two ways into this. I'm going to make it more personal now rather than political, or rather I'm going to make the political personal. So question number one, have you visited recently, and what was it like? Because people need to know. Not Donald Trump, he's a liar, but people falling for his lies need to know, okay? 03456060973. But also, tell me about the people who believe the lies. So Ned has opened the betting, all right? Ned has opened the betting at a landlady in Essex who thinks she'd have to wear a burqa if she came to London. I'm still sceptical about that. I'm not sceptical about Ned. I'm sceptical that, and I don't, well, what I mean by that is I know that she said that to him, but I don't know that she believed it. He thinks she did and he was there. Which is typical me, really, isn't it? I wasn't there, and I don't know her, but I'm convinced I know better than Ned about what actually happened in that conversation he was actually part of. But that's we're going to open the betting with a landlady in Essex who thinks she'd have to wear a burqa if she came to London. And Essex is only, you know, what, 50 miles away? So tell me about your Essex landlady or your Uncle Bob. or you. Maybe it's you. And you can tell me what you do believe about London. And I can just let you know, as a Londoner, indeed as Sir Mark Rowley described us, as proud Londoners, we can just let you know whether it's true or not. So the big question is, why do British people join in with foreign propaganda attacking our country? And the little question is, have you been here lately? How was it for you? 03456060973. And what else have you encountered, people, genuine, real people who you know, who you may even be related to or work with? What do they believe about London that you know to be bonkers, but they genuinely believe it? That gulf fascinates me, between the bonkers and the belief. All the good stuff lies. Andy's in Hornchurch. Andy, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. First of all, love your show.
You're very kind. It's part of the problem, actually. It's part of the problem, this show. Going around, getting shot in the ass. People listening to this show. If you listen to this show, you increase the likelihood of getting shot in the ass by about 400%, Andy. So be careful, all right? Stay sitting down when you're on public transport later today. Go on.
Yeah. And I will be as well. So lived in London 52 years. Used to live in Somerset, where fights in pubs was quite a regular thing, you know.
It's
the only trouble I've seen here. I used to be a head teacher. The only trouble I've ever seen here in terms of violence is on the playground, the occasional scrap with 11-year-olds. But, you know, it's just crazy.
That will be the common experience, is that most of us are lucky enough not to have encountered violence firsthand. But, of course, no one is suggesting, and obviously not you, but for the avoidance of doubt or for the comfort of idiots, there is violent crime in this city. Knife crime in this city. There are problems in this city, but they are nothing compared to the same problems in American cities. And things are actually better now compared to most British cities. So, it's just a statement of fact that you share with us from a perspective of having actually lived it. Why are so many British people desperate to believe the opposite, desperate to believe the untruth?
I think when you repeat the lie enough times, you know, on Facebook, on Twitter, and all the rest of it, and why would they have any reason not to believe it? Because, you know, there are people claiming that they live in London and that, you know, Sharia law and all the rest
Shakira.
Of it.
Shakira.
Yeah. I mean, if I was living in Norwich or something,
yeah.
You know, even though I'm fairly discerning with my reading of social media, I'd begin to think, well, maybe there's something in it. It can't all be lies.
I like you. That's generous. You're being more generous than I am. It's just that there's so much of it. There must be fire. There's so much smoke. There must be fire.
And I sent a message in earlier that I spent a month in the States, going through the southern states in February, and I spoke to so many Americans who felt sorry for me. They commiserated with me when I said I was from London. And a lot of
it's
them,
not funny.
In fact, most of them,
funny,
voted
not
against
funny.
Trump. They hate Trump.
But they've been absolutely drowning in anti-British propaganda. Masquerading as pro-British sentiment, of course, because they think that we need protecting from whatever this unspecified non-existent threat might be.
I mean,
we should do that as well. This is one of those topics. It's like a flower. It keeps opening. New petals keep appearing. Could we get a whole hour? Do you remember during the Brexit aftermath, we did a whole show where we wouldn't take any calls from Britain. We wanted to know what we looked like to the rest of the world. Switchboard went nuts. None of that counts for Radio. I don't get paid for any of that, you know. It's just not fair. I get rewarded in other ways, for example, with my Peace Prize. But the idea of doing a conversation with have we got any Americans on the line yet? Maybe it's the Uncle Bob. We need your Uncle Bob. What do your American friends believe? What do you in America hear from your friends or your neighbours and your colleagues about the city I live in? 03456060973 is the number that you need. So you've got people who don't like Trump but are still believing the anti-British propaganda. How have we ended up in a place where we can't all agree that anti-British propaganda is a bad thing? Answer, because some British people have believed it. Question, why?
This is LBC.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips?
Sometimes, pal, your best bet is not to bet at all. And BetVictor's app makes it really easy, simple and safe to do so. They've got lots of helpful features to help you manage your time and your spend online. But it also really helps that I can't find my blooming phone half the time.
Yeah, that does really help.
I don't even know where it is now. I can hear it, but I can't see it. Sandra?
Listen to Harry, and please gamble responsibly. 18+ gambleaware.org.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £14 million.
That's enough to get your hands in the air. Wow, you really don't care. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friends, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Aerolo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
17 minutes after 12, Peter's in Connemara. Hi, James. I live in the west of Ireland. I've just come back from a lovely week in London. I felt as safe there as I do here in Connemara. See, I told you he was in Connemara. Yohind is in North Wales. Hi, James. I'm in North Wales. You see, I told you. And I love our trips down to London. Perfectly safe and a lovely city to visit. Withdraw my name, please, says bleep. I live in Essex, and my neighbour said just the other day that she won't go to London anymore, as the last time she went, it was full of P-words. Seriously. Well, I've got, sadly, no problem believing that. All I would point out is that 5 years ago, she probably wouldn't have said that to you. She'd have just harboured those thoughts in private. Unless, of course, she went to Dulwich College, in which case she would have been fine saying it out loud, albeit a few years ago. Simon says, James, people need to continue the poison narrative because it's far easier to con someone than it is to get them to admit that they've been conned in the first place. And he makes the point that there are echoes of Brexit here. Gary, Southend, happy Friday. Same to you. I'm off to London shortly. I'm not packing a burqa. I can confirm. Only a sense of being excited for the good fun ahead. What a load of old cobblers, mate. It's bizarre, right? As a fairly regular visitor to the violent metropolis known as London, I can confirm that I always feel safe. Now, this is a British complaint from David. You ready for this? He can confirm that he always feels safe, but, or rather, however, in capital letters, here it comes. Here's the British, possibly Scottish, complaint. A little bit of low-level racist prejudice there. I do apologise. Here it comes. Ready? However, they do know how to extract the cash down there. They sure do, David. You should see how much a pint costs. Chris is in Arundel. Chris, what made you pick up the phone?
Well, actually, I've been listening to you for a long time and never called in, but you said people who were on their way back from having been in London, and I had my Christmas dinner with my work colleagues last night in Southwark.
Oh, I didn't mean literally. And, crikey, this is sensational. Yeah. You're literally on your way. Are you okay? Are you all right? Shall I send support? I could get the Red Cross to you probably in five seconds flat. Are you all right? Do you have any injuries?
Absolutely no injuries whatsoever.
Stabbed in the ass?
No, but one of my colleagues did say that her boyfriend had said, oh, be careful if you're going up to London. She's from the West Country.
Right.
And she laughed about it because we work in London quite often.
Yeah.
And, you know, the people who don't regularly visit have a preconception that it's this dangerous place that you're going to arrive in.
Do you know when it started? Because it did. I mean, I grew up in Kidderminster, and there were always people who were, oh, you'd never catch me in that London. And it was, I don't know what it was, and I don't want to be mean because they were lovely people, but it wasn't a fear of non-existent threats that informed it. When did the fear of the non-existent threats kick in?
You know what? I don't know if I could put my finger on it. I've worked in and out of London for the last 30 years, all my working career, really. And people have just always had this thing about, I wouldn't like to go into London. I wouldn't like to work in London. Yeah. All of those tropes have been there for a long time. When it became more racially motivated, because I think it is now, you know, this perception that it's full of brown people. I am a British Asian, so you know, I have a vested interest in this conversation. I would say is the fact that the multiculturalism is something that they don't like, and they don't like the growth of it. They all like to eat a curry on a Friday night or a Chinese, but what they don't like is seeing that all over the place, which is you do. One of the things I like about going into London. Growing, living in in Arundel,
yes.
I'm kind of, you know, the exception rather than the rule.
Okay.
And I like going into London to see the multiculturalism that's happening and the people that are out enjoying themselves and how it's not pigeonholed into groups. And,
no, I mean, and of course, on a very obvious point, I know you don't need me to point this out, but any business that wasn't enjoying custom would not last. So, you know, regardless of how many people are eating, I mean, what would an English, apart from fish and chips, what would an English takeaway sell?
wasn't there a sketch show, Goodness Gracious Me, where yes, they used to that?
Going out for an Indian family. Make it really bland, as Sajid Bhaskar used to go, make it really bland, I want the blandest dish you've got. God, that was a different age, actually, when you could, I wonder if that would land as well now, because it almost celebrated the fact that some of those prejudices felt like things of the past, didn't it? Whereas now, they're arguably moving back front and centre. But yeah, I don't know what it would be.
I think it's one of your phrases, isn't it? The people now say the quiet bit out loud a lot more than they used to.
Yeah.
And I'm in my 50s now, and so I lived through, you know, going to school in the 80s when there was quite a lot of overt racism, but also quite a lot of the anti-racist kind of movements that yes, were, you know, friends and then colleagues who were part of that kind of thing as well. And I think we have got back to that stage where it is acceptable to say that quiet part out loud now again, whereas for a long time it wasn't.
Yeah, and, no, you're right, and that's why they used to shout.
I don't think that people feel it more. I think they just say it more. Is probably the case.
I don't know what I hope, to be honest. I just hope things get better sooner rather than later, although history suggests that they won't. I don't know that I agree with you. I think some people are now harbouring thoughts they didn't harbour before because they are believing lies. And so it's a real feeling, even though it's built on lies. I never really understood why people used to get so cross about, quotes, political correctness, end quotes. And some of the stuff that would be amplified by the right-wing media was comical, you know, and you'd hear about they want to ban blackboards or they want to ban Bar Bar Black Sheep, the song, the nursery rhyme, and you'd read into it and it was at the very best or the very most it would be sort of one or two individuals or organisations who were making claims in the face of almost universal opposition, but of course you don't get that from a headline. It creates the idea in people's minds that something that is under threat. You saw it most with claims that Christmas was under threat. When again, you know, it's coming back round again this year because of Christmas trees for sale in a supermarket that labels them differently, because if they stuck Christmas tree on five different boxes with five different trees inside, people will end up buying the one they didn't want. But you create feelings of negativity. I'm less optimistic than you are. I don't think they were there all along. I think they've been created, or maybe more optimistic than you are. I don't know, the idea that they've been created, because if they've been created, they can be uncreated. Thank you, Chris. Safe journey home. Bon voyage. There's Chris, possibly the only person to have visited London last night from outside the capital who has not been stabbed in the ass or robbed or any of those things. And listen, for the avoidance of doubt, because, you know, this programme needs to be idiot-proof for obvious reasons, there are crimes in this city. There are crimes in this capital. There are hideous crimes in this capital. There are hideous crimes in every city in the world. But the head of the Met, who has a rather better finger upon the pulse of what's going on than any of us do, certainly than Donald Trump does, has been pretty categorical in how worried we should be about this stuff. And I don't think we can play this clip often enough, actually. And sadly, I think it should be on a loop in many Fleet Street offices, because this is the truth. You can't reach Billy Buncher numbers on social media, and Donald Trump's not going to change the habit of a lifetime and suddenly start caring about the truth. But newspaper columnists, newspaper editors, right-wing politicians, all joining in with a foreign propaganda attack upon our capital city, should probably have a little listen to the Metropolitan Police Commissioner.
So there's no no-go areas. That's completely false.
Is that fake news?
I think how anybody in America can suggest the UK is violent is completely ridiculous. I think the murder rate, the homicide rate in London is lower than every single US state. It's lower than all their big cities. I think the murder rate in New York, last time I looked, is about three or four times higher than it is in London, sort of per capita. whilst I make this point, the homicide rate in London is lower than it is in Toronto. It's lower than Paris. It's lower than Brussels. It's lower than Berlin. This is a safe city. I'm not going to pretend it's perfect. It's a safe city. Injury violence in London is lower than the other cities in the UK. And I think this trend of trying to rubbish London, some of which is driven by politics, we need to sort of, we who are proud Londoners need to fight back about it, because there's lots to be proud of about London. Clearly, there are some crime issues that we're tackling, and it's not perfect, but I'm proud of the progress we're making at reducing crime.
It is 26 minutes after 12. Nobody says it's perfect, but it's a hell of a lot better than most of the alternatives. So why does Donald Trump keep lying about it? Why do so many British people join in? And what's your reality? What can you actually say from lived experience rather than racist lies that you picked up on social media? Sandra is in Liverpool. Sandra, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello.
So, yeah, recently back from a fantastic visit to London.
Are you okay?
Three ladies, yeah, perfect.
Are you sure? Absolutely. Three ladies? Yeah, but you brought ten male bodyguards with you, didn't you, just
no,
to be on the safe side?
Three ladies.
But no one knew you were ladies because you were wearing burkas. You could have been anyone.
No, we weren't wearing any kind of burkas.
What?
It was a surprise for a friend's birthday.
Lovely.
We took a trip to London, and I have to say, it was one of the best weekends that we've ever spent together. We've been to other cities and other countries, and nothing compared to the visit to London that we had. We felt completely safe. We went to a show. We did the tourist stuff. All we saw was people getting on with their lives. No trouble.
You're one of those clogging up my pavements, aren't you? And I'm trying to get to the tube station in a bit of a hurry and you're all there pointing at things.
Again, the tube. We did a lot of travelling on the tube. Everyone was helpful, respectful. No problems whatsoever. Walked through Earls Court to get to a show. Didn't feel unsafe.
No, I used to live there.
I think it's just, obviously it suits certain people. Proper, agenda, doesn't it?
I guess it does. I'm not 100% watch what the agenda is, but I think it is. You can't possibly have a happy multicultural community. Were you expecting to be safe, or did some of this smoke reach you in Liverpool before you came down?
Well, I think being from Liverpool, we hear a lot of misinformation about our own city.
This is true.
So we're quite, you know, aware of that.
A little bit more clear-eyed than that than other.
You know, we did have the odd comment, you know, don't walk around with your phone out, don't do this. Well, I had my phone out plenty to find places that we wanted to visit.
Mm.
Never felt threatened at all. At all. But I think unfortunately, the people who are sort of spreading this, they don't want the facts to be known because it doesn't suit them.
And that could be coming from a whole heap of places. It could be just basic racism. It could be Donald Trump's hope of terrorising his own population. It could be a hatred of Sadiq Khan, not because he's a Muslim or brown skin, but simply because he's a Labour politician. But you would think at some point the priority would become patriotism and it would overcome the prejudice. But it doesn't. Well, it's gone so far now. It's remarkable.
Well, talking about patriotism, yes. I mean, to me, patriotism is not pulling down your own country. And also, just as a little side, I actually live in Liverpool, but I work in Manchester.
Okay.
And I've worked there for 13 years, and I travel in. And never until about 3 months ago, in 13 years of travelling there, have I seen a Union Jack flag or a St. George's flag. And now I travel down a certain road and everywhere, on every lamppost.
Yes.
And it really upsets me. I don't like it.
Because we know why they've been put up.
Yeah, of course we do.
And there may well, I mean, there may be, I'm not convinced, but there may be some people out there who are putting flags up, probably not in the middle of the night while wearing balaclava helmets and painting a couple of roundabouts on the way home, who really are doing it from a celebratory perspective of everybody British, everybody in this country, but they're very quiet if they are, because
they've been hiding for a long time then, haven't they?
I think you're right. And that, of course, is in many ways the corollary of patriotism. I wonder how many flag hangers, I have to say hangers, I can't use the rather more felicitous turn of phrase that is popular to describe these people, but I do wonder how many of the flag hangers are victims of the foreign propaganda campaign or exponents of it, people who are doing it or just falling for it. And what is the where is the line between people falling for it and then people spreading it? Sandra, thank you so much. I was walking around. In fact, I lost my phone the other day. I told you what happened, didn't I? It was almost like the polar opposite. Look, it's one phone. No one's pretending phone theft isn't a big problem in this city. But my phone was handed in to a police officer who was part of Operation Servitor on the streets of Brentford, West London, by a almost certainly foreign-born, because I went over to talk to him when the policeman pointed out where he was. They were just on the other side of the road waiting to pick up food from McDonald's. An Uber Eats delivery man, or a Just Eat delivery guy on a moped, an Asian chap, who had picked up my phone after it fell out of my pocket on the way back from tennis, handed it in to a police officer who was on duty in my part of London, and the police officer rang the number that was put on the phone on the emergency message, which was my wife's phone, and lo and behold, I got reunited with my phone. That's what happens in London if you're not careful. That was about what you might call a Susan Hall crime, in that I lost something, it got handed in, and I got reunited with it, and I'll be appearing on The Breakfast Show on Monday to explain how this is proof that Sadiq Khan's London is out of control. It's 12:32. That's not a dig at Nick, by the way. That's a dig at Susan Hall, for the record. Amelia Cox has your headlines.
The Health Secretary has told LBC he cannot guarantee that patients won't come to harm as a result of next week's strike by resident doctors in England. Wes Streeting says he's genuinely fearful for the NHS as it faces a steep rise in flu cases. The head of the Metropolitan Police has dismissed claims spreading in the US that Britain is violent as ridiculous. The suggestion is being fueled by President Trump, who says there are some areas of London even police won't enter. And economists have blamed pre-budget speculation and concerns for an unexpected fall in GDP. Most had been expecting an uptick in growth, but the economy contracted by 0.1% in October. LBC weather, a band of rain moving into central and eastern England. Largely dry and bright spells to follow, but it will be windy with showers in the far northwest of Scotland, a high of 12 degrees.
This is LBC. There's fast, really fast, and then there's Lightning Fibre Fast. It's the Lightning Fibre Winter Sale. Your chance to enjoy rock-solid full-fibre broadband for even less, with up to 20% off selected packages. And with one-touch switch, switching to Lightning Fibre couldn't be easier. Hurry, sale ends on December 31st. Check availability at lightningfibre.co.uk.
Lightning Fibre. Full fibre that rocks.
Two Costa Lattes for Abby.
The family calendar's already overflowing. Christmas parties, visiting the in-laws, and endless wrapping. But here, in this Costa coffee date, everything slows. Just a pair of hands held together and another holding mugs. You smile, promising to do this more before the season sweeps you away again. It's more than a latte. It's a Costa Christmas catch-up. Costa coffee, made with heart.
You know, sometimes you just want to mosey. Travel your own world. Slow things down a mite. Meet the locals and smell the coffee. So friends, take time to sit down with the folks at Little America and let them tailor make your trip to Canada and the US just the way you like it. For slow travel that nourishes the soul, head to littleamerica.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
12:35 is the time for balance. This is from James. James, I had a terrible experience while visiting London recently. I walked past Oliver Dowden. Behave. Scott's in Dundee. Scott, what made you pick up the phone?
Good afternoon, James. It's a long-time caller. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
You've messed it up, man. Start again. Do it again. Right, rewind. Scott's in Dundee. Scott, what made you pick up the phone?
Good afternoon, James. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Excellent stuff. Carry on.
My fiancé and stepson, we were in London a little bit earlier in the year. He just finished primary school, so it was around about July-ish time.
Yes.
And we had a great experience. Prior to coming down, though, we were aware of news that was coming out about the Devil's Puff, or whatever it was called, this mysterious kind of powder or that was being thrust in people's faces on the tube. And
I missed that. I mean, to be fair, I only live here. What blinds you while they nick your phone, does it, or something?
I think the Devil's Puff, I'm sure that's what it was called. It's what it was called in the media up here anyway. It seems to be like a psychedelic type drug, and that's when they would then if you get knocked out, they could then nick your phone or your wallet.
And I'm sure it has happened if it was reported in the media, but it's not something that has reached me. So yeah, you have genuine concerns because there's so much smoke, there must be some fire.
Well, yeah, to a degree, and we were worried about that. As far as being the tube goes late at night, there was also the media that we see up here sometimes in Scotland is to do with muggings or phones,
yes,
which is again reported widely a lot by yourselves and LBC. But when we went down, we didn't find any of that at all. It was just a fantastic experience. We would hop on, hop off bus for tourism. We did Paddington. We wandered around Harrods. It was just fantastic. We felt safe.
And Paddington's in the news today, actually. I've got you an unhinged headline. You've just reminded me. Get the unhinged headline sting ready, and I shall dedicate it to Scott, long-time listener, first-time caller, if I can find it, which, knowing me, I almost certainly can't. But the problem is an obvious one. It's as old as the hills, isn't it? The queue for the ghost train's 100 times longer than the queue for the Speak Your Weight machine. If you had been a victim of a violent crime, particularly if you were rich enough to wear a Rolex, you would have made the Daily Telegraph. But we can have 100, 1,000, 10,000 people over there visiting the capital and having a wonderful time and going home happy and replete, if a little bit lighter in the wallet area. And it's not a story. It's dog bites man, isn't it? So that's part of the problem here, is that there's loads of smoke. There's next to no fire at all, but there's no whatever the opposite of smoke is. You're not going to go on your social media to see people waxing lyrical about what a lovely time they've had in London. And let's be honest, Scott, if we did, we'd probably scroll through to the next one immediately, because there's nothing more boring than somebody else's holiday snapped.
Of course, yeah. It's negative news makes the headline, doesn't it? But, I mean, the thing with recently as well, I suppose, with Trump jumping on the bandwagon, is the politics and the news is obviously the immigration, Farage, reform, all talking about it's the immigrants causing the problems and that's why we should get them out. And I should point out for a start, firstly, I don't believe that at all, and I'm starkly against reform. But
sure.
That's the kind of thing that would be jumped upon by those who believe or who are maybe on the fence. Darren Brown once posited the idea through one of his experiments of mob mentality.
I guess so. But again, you know, we could potentially all be part of the mob. It's interesting, isn't it? In some ways, the most interesting testimony is probably from people that came feeling a little bit trepidatious, like that, like Scott, and thinking that, you know, because you would. I don't want to, you know, attack everybody. It's just the people. I mean, I'm starting with Donald Trump, and then I'm starting with journalists who live in London and know that it's lies, know that it's not true. And then, you know, obviously you've got the usual suspects on social media, but then your Uncle Bob on Facebook, a bit like Brexit, it's contempt for the con man, compassion for the conned. How's he ended up believing this nonsense? But it's easier to disbelieve than Brexit lies, because literally all you have to do is ask people or visit. And when you do, you realise that all of these fears were utterly misplaced. Again, for the avoidance of doubt and to make the show idiot proof, of course there is crime in London. But the idea that an American political figure can claim that it's less safe here than it would be in pretty much any American city, it's not even bizarre, it's beyond bizarre, it's something much uglier. Mohammed is in Oxford. Mohammed, what would you like to say?
Hiya, how's it going?
Very well, mate. What's on your mind?
Just before I get off, I wanted to say that
Go on.
I wanted to extend a heartfelt thank you for the great service that you provide to journalism. You do it with such integrity and perspicaciousness, and I think you're a modern-day hero for that.
Oh, you're very kind. Is there a big buck coming?
I'm hoping to get you on side, I guess. I feel like there's too much emphasis placed on the people propagating these notions,
yes,
as opposed to accountability for the people perpetuating them. I feel like the crux of the issue is really that we have a deeply ingrained racism within society. It's a sliding scale between ignorance fueled by prejudice, or prejudice fueled by ignorance, to racism fueled by bigotry.
It's about how fertile the soil is, I think. And obviously I'm going to have a bit or a lot of white privilege here, but to me it's about how fertile the soil is. And I wouldn't argue about the fertility of the soil, but seeds need to be sown and they need to be watered. And that's where I think we've really failed where people haven't... I remember Sadiq Khan explaining to me, and I'm sure he's done it on air, so it's not in any way a betrayal of confidence. The only time we talk off air, really, will be here, when the microphones aren't on. And I said to him, shouldn't you be coming down a bit harder on some of this abuse that's coming in? Shouldn't we be sharing more of it? And his argument was always that he doesn't want to put particularly young Asian people off politics. He doesn't want to put anybody off politics, and anybody in receipt of the kind of poison that he sees on a daily basis would put somebody off, and he doesn't want to put people off politics. And I always found that a very persuasive argument, but I'm beginning to wonder now whether we should have moved further and faster against the forces that you describe, against the people for whom this is bread and butter, and bread, butter, and bigotry.
Yeah, I'll have to... Am I still on air?
Yeah.
Sorry, the line is just getting a bit funny. I think that position is somewhat a commendable one, but we have to focus on the kind of larger issues before we go micro again.
And how do we do that? How do we push back against... So Mark Rowley says proud Londoners have to stand up against this, and albeit that you're in Oxford, what does standing up against it look like?
It looks like standing up to power in every form and shape. So if you look at kind of the reports on the Met Police being institutionally racist,
yes.
If you look at the treatment of ethnic minority women in pregnancy wards, if you look at all of these things, you can see a common theme running across everything that we do have at the very crux of our society, underlying institutional racism. And if we don't confront that, then we can't confront the individual because we're not supported by these agencies.
And of course, Sir Mark Rowley, who I have been very praising of today, remains a man who rejects the use of the phrase institutional racism even after it appears in numerous investigations into his own force, because he worries about the impact upon morale among his ranks, and that would be no doubt a piece of evidence you could cite in defence of your position, Mohammed. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, we're focusing upon one element of it, but, of course, the bigger picture would involve the fertility of the soil. It's not so much why are so many people joining in with foreign propaganda attacks upon our capital city. It's why were so many people ripe for harvesting? And the answer, sadly, must involve a susceptibility to bigotry, or a very low-lying bigotry, or merely the fertility of the soil that can then be sown, reaped and harvested by racists, or at least by opportunistic politicians who use racism to distract electorates from what they are doing and from the real causes of the problems that they, the electorate, face. Laurie is in Gypsy Hill. Laurie, what would you like to say?
Hi there, yes. Hi, James. I'm a first-time caller as well. I've never called any radio station in my life.
That's all right. I mean, you know, you sound as if you're a little bit surprised to find yourself on the radio, Laurie, but I will take it as a compliment.
I'm super surprised. But there are a couple of reasons why I'm calling. One is that I'm just about finishing my training as a Blue Badge tourist guide in London. So the things you're talking about have an impact on the economy of the tourist economy here in London.
Yes.
Secondly, I lived for 7 years outside the UK. I've lived in Colombia in South America, and my wife is from there. And thirdly, I'm a therapist, and therefore I have some insight about why people live by certain stories. But I want to start with the Colombian thing because... Yeah. I just want us to catch ourselves. And by the way, I'm not talking here from wanting to be right or from having any kind of ideology to sell, but I will say this, that if I talk to anybody about Colombia, they will have a set of ideas and a story in their head that comes from narcos, and that almost 80% of them will make a joke about cocaine before I even start a conversation.
Yeah.
And I think we just need to catch ourselves about, we're so indignant about what's going on here in terms of other countries having an opinion about London that isn't correct. Try being a Colombian and living with that all your life and all your generation of life, right?
Yes.
And secondly, the same thing, if I were to ask you what your opinions were of the southern states of the United States, which I don't happen to know particularly well, but, you know, they will come to mind a set of images of people with guns, Bible bashing, and being ill-educated and not having passports.
Yeah, there's a difference between a stereotype and a blatant lie, though, mate.
Yes, absolutely.
A massive difference.
Absolutely.
And I don't want to accuse you of whataboutery, particularly not on the Colombian thing, because that's obviously very personal to you. But a stereotype is built upon reality. It's an exaggeration or an amplification of observable reality. Donald Trump isn't stereotyping London. He's lying through his teeth about it.
Sure, indeed he is. But, okay, I mean, there are lies, but lies are perpetrated about lots of countries that become anecdotal and that people pass amongst themselves thinking that they're true.
Sure.
You know, I'm just kind of catching ourselves on that, first of all.
Okay.
I think the second thing I would say is that people don't live, but we all live anecdotal lives. We all have individual experiences and we build a picture and a storyline around what meaning we create for a place, right? So I'm not in any way justifying, by the way, this view of London or these lies about London or whatever it may be. But what I'm saying to you is humans, sometimes I think that we struggle to believe that humans have rationality as their core of what drives them. None of us is really very rational. We're all kind of extrapolating from our own experience.
This is the ghost train always has a longer queue than the speak your wait machine, and yet there's nothing actually frightening about the ghost train because it's mechanical and it's made by human beings and it's bits of skeleton dangling from a ceiling, and yet we're still capable in an entirely irrational way of being frightened by it, and we'll pay someone to frighten us. Just before, because you made me late for the break, I just want to nudge you towards the economic impact of what Donald Trump is doing, which I think you have a personal investment in a bit.
Well, I have a personal investment, yes, I do, because the majority of tourists that pay for guides and are interested in London are Americans.
Yes.
And my impression, although I haven't started fully guiding yet, but from all the tutors and all the cohort that I know, the sense is that the people who come here love London dearly. But the final thing I would say is the reason that we allow these stories to take place is partly because we don't have an alternative positive narrative about London very much anymore.
Yeah, and that's where we've been remiss, and that's where I feel a little bit, guilty would be too strong a word. I mean, I still feel a little bit silly now saying, give me a ring and tell me how amazing London is, because it's a bit like, you know, asking if you've ever had a parking ticket that was unfair. There'll be loads of people, but it's actually not the same, is it, because of what Laurie says. What does fighting back look like? Well, when the Met Police Commissioner says, we've got to start fighting back against these lies, against this ludicrous racist narrative, my words, not his. What does that look like? And at the moment, I don't know. I've got nothing other than what we're currently doing. And that's quite a small response, isn't it, in the great scheme of things? A drop in the ocean of social media, where liars will be dominating the conversation, dominating the narrative. Oh, yeah, what does he know? I bet he's never even been to London. Genuinely, I'm not even exaggerating. I'm sitting in the middle of Leicester Square. I came here by public transport. I'll go home by public transport. Went out two, three times in the last 2 weeks, late, in central London. I don't wear a Rolex because I can't afford one. But I wear a watch. I lost my phone a couple of days ago. Got handed in by an Uber Eats driver of Asian extraction. Police found it, handed it to me, called me up, gave it to me. All of these things, doesn't matter, he doesn't know what it's really like. I bet he doesn't know what it's really like. Do you know what it's really like? Yes, I do. Where do you live? Well, nowhere near London. When's the last time you visited? 1994. When? Sorry? 1994. Well, I came to the Millennium Dome in the year 2000. I came for the fireworks. Okay, and who knows this place better? You or me? And, of course, the answer on social media is me. 100%, you big woke whoopsie. It's 12:49.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Wes Streeting tells LBC he's genuinely fearful for the NHS in the face of a super flu and doctor's strike. But are we getting good advice? And the Met Chief defends London from Trump's attacks.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Yep. I'm still dancing. And there's still time to get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. So turn up that dial.
The Euro Millions jackpot is £14 million.
Go on, play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
You weren't supposed to burn the potatoes or invite everyone round at 2. We said 3. You weren't supposed to fall asleep on the sofa. or ask me to marry you. And you weren't supposed to be here. But you are, thanks to the best gift you ever got. And mine is still having you.
When you donate to the British Heart Foundation, you give a gift that keeps on living. Search BHF today and help us fund life-saving research.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is. And you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
James O'Brien on LBC. Text 84850.
12:52 is the time. I've got an unhinged headline and a missed information and a full disclosure for you and a bunch of callers still waiting to talk to me about, quote, crime-riddled London, end quote. Spoiler alert, it's no such thing. Someone tell the president. Let's start with the unhinged headline.
Unhinged headline.
Gets me every time, doesn't it? It makes it sound like a proper radio show with stings and jingles and all the rest of it. This is from the Daily Telegraph. It's written by David Frost. The man that Boris Johnson put in the House of Lords for services to idiocy. Are you ready for this? You may not be aware of this. You may need this in your life, this information. Here it comes. Ready? Paddington is irrelevant to our island story. I'm not even going to go any further. That's what the most important issue facing the country is today, according to... We need a little nickname for David Frost, don't we, Lord Frost? I think my favourite ever was probably Digby Pudding Jones. But what could we call David Frost in a very childish and juvenile fashion that would properly reflect his utter, utter idiocy? I don't know. I'll come up with it. Anyway, Paddington is irrelevant to our island story. And on a slightly more serious note, would you like a missed information? You would? Oh, marvellous.
Missed information.
Thank you, Emily. Here's the headline, also from the Daily Telegraph. Farage's old school says racism claims are distressing as ex-pupils leap to his defence. So that's an interesting headline. Farage, of course, still hiding. I'll leave you to work out why. But the, and I think the number of former schoolmates that are now recalling and confirming the allegations and accusations of quite hideous racism and anti-Semitism, which Farage originally denied and then claimed couldn't possibly be remembered by anybody and then claimed that he could remember and it definitely didn't happen and then claimed that it did actually happen but it wasn't racist and then claimed that it was racist but it wasn't offensive. Are you still with me at the back? But I was struck by that line in the Daily Telegraph here because the Daily Telegraph and the Daily Mail are at great pains to pretend that this isn't evidence of what the man is truly like. Ex-pupils leap to his defence. So I thought, wow, there must be more. Since the last time he dared to show his face in public and claimed he'd received a letter from one former pupil, but he couldn't tell us who it was because he went to the same school. So I've got to the article. There must be loads more because the Daily Telegraph says they're leaping to his defence, no less. They've leapt to ex-pupils. I've leapt to his defence. Here it is. So this is a response to the current headmaster of Dulwich College expressing his dismay at, and indeed his distress at what Nigel Farage did when he was a pupil at the school, according to now 28 people who were there at the same time. This is the pupils, ex-pupils leaping to Farage's defence. If he is interested, I can show him the many messages I have received from fellow pupils, including Jewish ones, that entirely contradict these allegations. A statement of such utter, utter absurdity that I'm astonished even the Daily Telegraph printed it. Even though they printed an article under the headline Paddington is irrelevant to our island story on the same morning. Because there are two problems with this. Number one, nothing's changed since the last time he dared to show his face in public and claimed that he was receiving messages of support from former pupils, but he couldn't tell us who they were. And number two, if I don't witness something, doesn't mean it never happened. I can't believe I need to explain that. If I don't witness something, it doesn't mean it never happened. So even if he does have people saying, I never witnessed this, that is not support for the idea that it never happened. Unbelievable. Before I get back to it, well, I'm probably not going to have time for another call. I must shut up and talk less and take more calls. One day I will. The winners of the Global Player Awards have been announced this week, if you missed it. The Newsagents win Best Podcast Show, officially the most listened to podcast on Global Player. Biggest new podcast, Christiane Amanpour Presents, The X-Files with Jamie Rubin. You can find the full list. I'm not on it yet. And to listen to both these award-winning shows, just head to Global Player. My award came in a bit late, my Global Player Peace Prize. Brackets, mid-mornings, weekdays only, LBC closed brackets. That came in a little bit late for inclusion in the full roundup, but I did win it nonetheless. And I won another prize last week. I got to sit down with someone I've been wanting to interview for an extremely long time. I don't think I'm going to tell you who it is. I'm just going to play the clip with, and then it'll be a delightful surprise to you.
Every 11-year-old boy wants to be a footballer when they grow up. When do you think, looking back, because you wouldn't have known at the time, that that became a realistic prospect for you?
It wasn't realistic until 15, 16. Yeah. And by that point, I'd already been released by Southampton.
What was that like?
Well, heartbreaking at the moment it happened.
Yeah.
A bit impersonal. You just got a letter through the post. There was no sort of meeting.
It's brutal.
But when I look back, although the dream was to be a footballer, I didn't have any awareness of the realities of what that journey was going to be at that point. And it was only when I left school, went into full-time training, you're suddenly in this men's environment where people are playing for their livelihoods. They need the win bonus to pay the mortgage. So that sudden shift from this is a game I'm playing for fun with my mates to no, this is a job. And it's a very different mindset.
So this is doing a YTS at Palace, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, and I really struggled with that
Did you?
Adaptation. Yeah, I had to get two trains to get to the training ground before I was able to drive. Yeah, I was physically a late developer. I was psychologically a bit soft.
Okay.
So I had a lot of toughening up to do when I was 16, 17, yeah.
It didn't help that you turned up in a shirt and tie. Maybe not a tie. That's probably a bit mythological.
I went no tie, but I did. I turned up first day in my school uniform because I thought, well, you know, I guess you've got to be smart on your first day. And, of course, everybody else was in tracksuits. So, yeah, to say I had problems fitting in at the start would be very fair.
The only interview I've ever conducted which began with me telling him that my wife told me to tell him that she loves him. I hope that doesn't become a habit. And Dear England, Lessons in Leadership by Gareth Southgate is available to purchase now from all major booksellers, it says here, but I'm willing to wager minor booksellers will have it as well. Mediocre booksellers probably got it in stock, and indeed rubbish booksellers as well. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player. The fight back begins against propaganda and lies about London. Not here, actually. It began with Sir Mark Rowley earlier on The Breakfast Show, but it continues. You can listen on the new LBC app. You can stay up to date with all the top stories and opinions. You can put your news categories in the order you want. You can pause live radio, rewind live radio, listen to a range of podcasts, including Full Disclosure with Gareth Southgate, James O'Brien Daily, the best bits of this show every day, non-award-winning podcasts galore presented by me. Download the official LBC app free from... Are you all right there?
Sorry.
That's okay. Would you like a cough sweet?
Wasn't that perfect timing?
I feel like Philip Hammond and your Theresa May. Coming up at 4 on LBC is Tom Swarbrick, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
God, you got your own back there quickly, didn't you? Absolutely. I'll be defending London at 3 as well. He keeps his head, Mark Rowley, doesn't he? But there was no disguising his irritation at President Trump's attacks on London and its mayor, of course. So what is the truth? We'll work it out together after 3. The Health Secretary, West Streety, though, is where I start. He says the resident doctor strike is risking serious harm to patients. I've said it before, I'll say it again. More on that after 2. The super flu, as it's been called, is on his mind as well. It's on everybody's mind. It's where we start today. In the desire not to trigger COVID memories and battles over masking and vaccination and what have you, are the government leaving you confused about what to do on sending your kids to school, getting jabs, socialising, Christmas with the family, transport, working from home, you name it. What age you can get a jab at, that kind of thing. Coming up next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, the Health Secretary has told LBC he cannot guarantee that patients won't die if a resident doctor strike goes ahead in England next week. Wes Streeting says they're facing the worst pressure since the pandemic because of a surge in flu cases. Members of the British Medical Association are voting on a new offer from the government which could avert war counts from the 17th. Mr Streeting had this message for doctors.
We've made a lot of progress together, not just on pay and on jobs, but on the NHS itself. Don't put that recovery at risk. Don't make lives of your colleagues harder next week, and don't put the lives of patients at risk.
The head of the Met Police says claims circulating in the US that London is violent are complete nonsense. The rumours are being partly fuelled by President Trump, who says there are some areas even police won't enter in the British capital. Sir Mark Rowley was asked on LBC about the latest suggestion.
There's no no-go areas. That's completely false.
Is that fake news?
I think how anybody in America can suggest the UK is violent is completely ridiculous. I think the murder rate, the homicide rate in London is lower than every single US state. It's lower than all their big cities. I think the murder rate in New York, last time I looked, is about 3 or 4 times higher than it is in London, sort of per capita.
The commissioner also confirmed that the force is looking into the findings of an LBC investigation. Earlier this week, we revealed that a former officer was allowed to retire while being investigated over grooming allegations. Smark says they are looking into how the case was handled by the Met in 2012. Britain's economy was in decline for the second month running in October. Analysts had been expecting a slight rebound, but official figures show GDP fell by 0.1% month on month. The Treasury says it's determined to defy the forecasts and create jobs. And the best-selling author Joanna Trollope has died at the age of 82. Her daughters say she passed away peacefully at her home in Oxfordshire yesterday. She published more than 30 novels during a writing career that began in 1980. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 5 points at 97.08. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.14. LBC weather, a band of rain moving into central and eastern England. Largely dry and bright spells to follow, but it will be windy with showers in the far northwest of Scotland, a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
This Christmas at Tesco, get selected meat joints and boneless salmon sides better than half price with your Tesco Club card. That's what makes it Christmas. Tesco, every little helps. Majority of larger stores excludes Northern Ireland. Beef and lamb ends 28th of the 12th, hawk 6th of the 1st, gammon 13th of the 1st, salmon 1st of the 1st, club card required.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. Now, I know we spoke about the flu and the state of the NHS because of it and other factors as well yesterday, but the warnings coming from the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting in particular, about the precariousness of the situation in hospitals especially, needs our attention again, I think. I'm going to spend the next couple of hours looking at all kinds of aspects bearing down on the health service at the moment, but most importantly, bearing down on us, the users of the health service, you, the users of the health service. I was conscious yesterday that we were talking about attitudes. You were telling me your attitudes towards the advice you were getting, whether you wanted a very sort of laissez-faire government about this, just hands off, or whether you want clearer advice and guidance about, for example, how to get your flu vaccine, because it's the government and the NHS pushing and reminding us to get our vaccines, pushing and warning us about how much pressure the hospitals are under. So I wonder whether you think what they say beyond that to help you is good enough. I get the feeling, and I got the feeling perhaps a little less with Wes Streeting, but I've certainly got the feeling from the government more generally, and certainly from Keir Starmer yesterday when he spoke to LBC's East of England reporter Shivani Sharma. I get the feeling that they are shy of sounding too COVID-y, too lockdowny about all of this. Masks maybe, but no particular advice on that. Keep your distance maybe, but oh, you know, go about your life as normal, go to work, da 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 da. And yet what came through from you yesterday was quite a lot of confusion about, particularly on vaccines, but not just on that. He on the programme this morning, Nick Ferrari's programme, Breakfast, the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, said, I mean, he didn't hold, pull his punches at all. He said the NHS could collapse and he couldn't give a guarantee that people wouldn't die if the doctor strikes go ahead. Talk more about those after two. And this super flu, that they're calling it, continues to pile pressure on hospitals.
I think with the flu pressures we're seeing on the NHS at the moment, this is probably the worst pressure the NHS has faced since COVID. There is a lot of flu around and there is a particularly aggressive strain that's knocking people out and are leading to not just people turning up at hospital, but even being admitted to hospital. Now, if we didn't have strikes looming over us, I would be extremely worried about that situation. This is always a hard and challenged time for the NHS in the run-up to Christmas and the first week of the new year. We could just about cope with that. The idea that we will have to contend with that plus strikes is dangerous, actually. And I am extremely worried about the pressure on staff, but more seriously, the risk to patients if we end up with that double whammy of both flu and strikes. That was why I actually said to the BMA earlier this week, if you are willing to call off these strikes while your members vote on the offer that we've put to you, I will extend your strike mandate to the 2nd of February so that you can rearrange your strikes in January.
Because that you're saying, get us over this hurdle and then we'll talk again in the new
year. Because that would do two things. Firstly, it would give BMA members more time, actually, to vote on this offer, to debate it with their colleagues, debate it with me, debate it with their union reps. It would remove the spectre of strikes. Because the challenge we've got now is that, let's say this ballot is successful from my point of view, resident doctors vote for it, call off the strikes. Some of the damage will have already been done because there will be patients who've already had their appointments cancelled and doctors who've had their leave cancelled to cover strikes. And I cannot understand why, when I offered to rearrange strikes in January, why they didn't take up that offer. Because if they wanted to just give me a kick in, well, there's an opportunity to do that in January. I can only assume that the reason why they refuse to do that is because they know that this week will be most painful for the NHS. Most painful for me, sure. But to be honest, given the pressure that puts on other NHS staff and the risk it poses to patients, I don't understand why the BMA have not been willing to compromise in that way. And I hope that BMA members will bear that in mind when they're filling in this electronic survey and being asked if they will agree to stand down strikes and vote for progress on jobs.
With the collapse of the NHS being midnight, how close to midnight would you say we are, Mr. Streeting? 1 minute to midnight?
Effectively, yeah. The thing that I'm genuinely fearful of is that even if I throw more money at this situation now at this time to get through the next week on strikes, there's only a finite number of doctors and staff. There's only a finite number of care home beds and community-based care. So if you've got strikes and you've got flu and you've got all of these trolleys on corridors and you've got demand going up rather than down, I just don't think there is a lever I can pull. I don't think there's an amount of money I can throw that means I can sit on your programme and guarantee patient safety over the next week. And that's a pretty terrifying